Good morning, members. Let me just call the meeting to order and just lay out our agenda for today. We have reserved this morning for testimony from the public, though a couple of people have signed up for this evening. But mainly we're going to have public testimony this morning on two bills, House File 461, which is the Clean Water Fund, Parks and Trails, 641, I'm sorry, and House File 1679. House File 1679 is the governor's proposal for water fees modified and money appropriated. That bill is not formally before us, so I am going to move House File 1679. And I'm just telling you the procedure. I'm going to move it. I'm going to move a technical amendment, and then I'm going to lay it over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. So we can talk about it, but we are not going to be voting on it today. But tonight, we will be voting on House File 641. Amendments have been submitted. There are, I think, about a half a dozen. So maybe members can even get home at a reasonable time tonight. So that is our agenda. So I have moved House File 1679, and I would like to move the amendment, the A1 amendment, which is a technical amendment. It does not change the bill. It clarifies it. All of those in favor of the A1 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? The A1 amendment is adopted. And so the bill is before us, but I will later lay it over for inclusion for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. A number of people have signed up to testify this morning, though we are going to welcome anyone who wants to testify. The testifiers seem to fall into two categories, waters and parks. And because Mr. Meckel from the DNR, who knows, who has presented House File 1679 is in bonding for about 15 minutes. I am going to start with the testimony from folks who want to talk about the parks portion of the bill. And with that, I would invite up Mark Thimming, Scott County, Three Rivers Park, if he is here. Is Joan Wilshire here? Is there anybody else here who, I mean, we'll let you do this later too, but is there anybody else here who would like to specifically talk about the parks portion of the bill? We'd love to have you come up. I believe this is Al Liefert.
Yes, it is. Thank you, Representative.
Good morning.
And would you introduce yourself for the record and welcome?
Yes, thank you, Representative Wagenius and committee members. My name is Al Liefert. I work for Douglas County, and I represent the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Coalition. With me is Tom Ryan from Olmsted County.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I should also add that, for the record, that I serve as a co-chair for Greater Minnesota and was one of the seated nine on the Legacy Advisory Funding Committee, and it's also my pleasure to serve on the Legacy Advisory Committee. With that, Madam Speaker, we'd like to make a statement. I think I'll begin by just reading it. It's short, which I'm sure will help everybody today. You have a big day. Greater Minnesota recognizes that the numbers in this bill differ from the governor's budget. Most noticeably, that state parks is reduced to 37%, while metro parks are increased to 43%, position that we seriously doubt most Minnesotans would support. The Greater Minnesota Regional Park and Trail Coalition continues to believe that the consensus agreement reached by the DNR Commissioner's 9-member funding committee, which is part of Governor Dayton's budget, is the best way forward for all Minnesotans and all park and trail systems. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. As I said, I'm Al Liffert with the Greater Minnesota Coalition as well. And Representative Wagenius, what I'd like to do is just make comments on the contents of the section dealing with Greater Minnesota Parks. And it starts around line 33, and it's within the Department of Natural Resources budget section, and it deals with the grant program and the trails grants that were outlined in this bill. There are several good and very important initiatives in this bill, we believe. Most importantly, for the sections relating to non-metropolitan regional parks and trails, Section 7, which addresses the need for a commission of public officials to help manage the development of a statewide network of regional parks and trails, is included in this bill. We feel this is a very positive step for us and for everyone. We're also deeply appreciative that the author has recognized the need to support the 9-member consensus funding level for regional parks and trails outside the metropolitan area. We do recommend the following considerations or amendments. I'm not exactly sure how that process works to this bill, though. Lines 33.3 through 33.27 detail a series of trail projects for funding. We, the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks Group, are uncertain how this list was developed, but in looking at it, we could recognize that 5 of the proposals, the Swedish Immigrant Trail, the Sunrise Prairie Trail, the Lake Walk in Duluth, the Mesabi Trail, and the Lake Wobegon Trail, have been vetted using the criterion in the strategic plan that was developed over the last year and a half, and are recognized by everyone as regional trails. 2 of the others, the Ricori Trail and the Dakota Rail Trail, were listed by our vetting process as probable regional trails but needing more information. The other 4, the Beaver Bay Trail, the Red Wing Riverfront, the Mississippi River Parks and Water Trail, and the Sauk River Regional Park, were not listed on the inventory, have not been evaluated, and we're even uncertain what they are. So we don't really know where the list came from, and consequently have a difficult time commenting on its validity. But we do believe that the strategic plan that was developed over the last year and a half through the 175 study is the best tool for evaluating these investments, and that project selection should be fully vetted before being called out for specific funding by the legislature. That's our opinion. In line 42.3, it discusses, I'm going to flip back to that if I can just take a second here to make sure I'm in the right section. Line 42.3 is in that Section 7 that deals with this Greater Minnesota Regional Park and Trails Commission.
Would you say that number again, please?
It's line 42.3.
Okay.
And it's in the section that talks about the commission. We were feeling that 6 districts is probably adequate in asking the commissioner to establish districts in Minnesota, that 6 districts is probably adequate, a little more manageable. There could be 12 commissioners, possibly 2 from each district. It was just a comment made by our group on the composure of the bill. In line 42.19, it moves down to the section on regional significance, and of course this is where we have the most difficulty when we discuss things. The conditions that are listed in the bill appear to be taken from rules developed for use in the metropolitan region. For many reasons, these conditions do not apply in non-metropolitan Minnesota, and we recommend that the language be changed. And I'll just read what we think it should say. First of all, we would just strike all of those sections from 4221 to 4230 and say, meet the established provisions of the Greater Minnesota Regional Park and Trail Strategic Plan, which is consistent with the 25-year legacy plan as it relates to regionally significant parks and trails in Greater Minnesota. And then a second section would say that this Greater Minnesota Strategic Plan shall be updated every 5 years. That we feel is the correct document for the commission to reference when analyzing projects and vetting projects in areas outside the metropolitan area. And shall I just keep going?
I do have one member on the list, but I think we can finish your remarks before I ask members for comments.
All right, I have just a couple of more to make. In line 43.5 and through 43.7, this language is directed at non-state match for legacy projects. Once a project is identified through the strategic plan vetting project as being eligible for legacy funding, agencies in non-metropolitan Minnesota must demonstrate the financial capacity to operate and maintain these facilities before being funded. That's part of the strategic plan. Unlike the metropolitan regional parks or state parks, there's no provision for operation or maintenance of funding for these regional facilities. These very special parks are only a part of what the agencies that operate them have the responsibility for, and there really should be no question about skin in the game, is the way that I've heard it described. We would prefer if you had some skin in the game. We have lots of skin in the game. So those rules don't apply in the Metropolitan Legacy Fund, and we don't think they should be applied in the non-metropolitan areas either. And then finally, we recommend adding a sub-11 and appropriating funds to operate this commission. I said $200,000 in 2014 and $200,000 in 2015 is appropriated from the general fund to the commission so that the commission may hire a director, consultants, or staff to carry out the duties of the commission. And as explanation, there's a tremendous amount of work to do, including organizing and conducting the hearings, planning meetings, and discussions that are outlined within the districts as defined in this bill. Continuing to train the regional park agencies in the inventory update procedures and the visit count surveys that are detailed in the strategic plan. Preparing information for future legislative sessions so that projects can be listed and ranked. The commission needs, for lack of a better word, its own Arnie. I say that as something of a joke, and assuming that everyone knows what I'm talking about, but of course I'm referencing Mr. Stefferud, the professional that works for the Metropolitan Agency and does such a wonderful job for them. This commission is going to need something like that in order to perform the way that you hope they will and that we expect them to as well. Thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Representative Ball.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess to either Mr. Reiner or Mr. Leffert, is that
Leffert.
Leffert. Just a question. Who is responsible for spending the money?
The $200,000 or the legacy grants?
The overall legacy appropriations. Who is responsible for spending it?
They're always granted to either cities, counties, or school districts is what state law says. And I think, by and large, it's counties and cities.
Madam Chair, and I thought I was under the impression that we actually in the legislature make the decisions about how the money is appropriated and or spent. And that's one of the questions I keep hearing is that we, you know, have to follow exactly the recommendations of these advisory councils. But ultimately, those of us here in the legislature are responsible to the citizens, the taxpayers, and the people of Minnesota to make the appropriations. So I'm just asking once again, just, you know, who is responsible for making those appropriations or spending decisions?
Well, I think I understand the question completely, Representative, and the legislature is responsible for allocating these funds. There's no question about that. We do not call the shots on this. Once the funds are allocated, though, to a subdivision of the state government, like a county or a city, those of us that work for those agencies are responsible for following the procedures set out in state law. So I don't mean to say that you don't have the right to tell us where these funds should be spent. I'm not saying that at all. But we have been asked numerous times to provide lists, to prioritize projects, to tell you what is important, to help you understand so that the rules, the outlines of the 25-year legacy plan are followed, and that over time, the system that's built in Minnesota with this fund is what you want and what the people want. So I hope that answers your question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate your insight into it. I think that we oftentimes have constituents or things from our districts that get brought forward, or we see particular advantages or particular opportunities, and we have the responsibility to go and decide to either move those projects forward or not move those projects forward. And not always is it that those go through the select advisory councils. And so it seems like, at least in my opinion, that there's become a very strong perception that the advisory opinions must be taken as, not to make a church reference here, but as gospel. And I once again, I have to remind folks that we have the responsibility to ultimately make those funding decisions here. And that's one of the things where we have to work together to pass a bill. And I just, I hope people understand that there often can be and sometimes need to be changes made to some of these advisory opinions, because we see things that come up in the course of a legislative session that have to be addressed.
Thank you, Representative Falk, and I certainly understand that. We have had discussions about that very topic many times.
Thank you. Representative McNamara?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning. Mr. Lifford, thank you for coming down and for testifying, coming down from Alexandria and Douglas County. To Representative Falk's point, absolutely, we are the legislature, and we can decide what to do, and we don't need to listen to the people that have spent time researching, and we're down here. We got to work on health and human services and transportation and all kinds of different things, and we can decide not to listen to professionals or citizens out in the hither land that have come and made recommendations to us. We can decide just to change things for whatever reason. You made mention that for whatever reason there's some numerical projects on page 33. I found it coincidental that they're numbered 1 through 11, and 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11, you're not sure where they came from. So they're at the bottom of the list. It must be coincidental. But can you say again, you have a process that makes some recommendations. Is there any science or need or rationale for why this group would make recommendations for trails, and why maybe we know better than we should just pick and choose which ones are better than to listen to you?
Thank you, Representative McNamara. I will describe the process that we use to rank the projects, and it was the directive that we got in last year's legislature to propose and make a system to prioritize projects outside the metropolitan area. And the assumption was that a systematic process was in place within the metropolitan region for providing advice to the legislature on how projects ought to be ranked. We were asked to do the same thing in last year's legislature, and so we did. We formulated an analysis ranking procedure, and we looked at, as the baseline information, the inventory that was conducted by the University of Minnesota that identified regional parks in 2011. That was the list that we started to work from. And when I commented that five of the projects were ranked as certainly regional parks and two of them were listed as possibilities, Those were projects that were on the university's inventory. We vetted them through the ranking system that we established in the strategic plan. And the four that I said were not there, they were not on the university's inventory. And so we didn't rank them because we didn't know they weren't on the inventory, which was the place that we started. And I did call to Stearns County to try and understand where is the Sauk River Regional Park, and had Lake Wobegon, had the, which one was it that I... The Mississippi River Water Parks Trail is just something that I hadn't heard of. The Sauk River Regional Park, the park superintendent in Stearns County wasn't sure if that was in Sartell, if there was a municipal project in Sartell that they had renamed as that. So we just didn't have any information about that. And so my comments were not meant to say that those are unworthy projects. We just didn't know anything about them, so we couldn't rank them. And this, I think we fully understand that when we present a list to you and say, this is what we think is the best, that's all we're saying. That you have, we're not telling you what to do any more than the Met Council or the DNR tells you what to do, but more in the same way.
Let me see if I can shed a little light on this, but if you'd like to go first, Representative McNamara.
No, go ahead.
The one you're talking about on 3325 is a project that Representative Kahn has worked with Representative O'Driscoll on, and the remainder of the ones that you're talking about were either vetoed earlier, I assume by Governor Plenty, so they had been designated and then vetoed, or they were proposed to the Legacy Committee. So there is a source.
And, oh, I knew that.
And they are on the website, so for people who wanted to observe them. Representative McNamara, I interrupted you.
Thank you, ma'am. I appreciate that insight. That's helpful. What I am wondering, Madam Chair, did we have bills for any of these five projects in this committee? Have we heard any of these?
We have not heard any of these. Well, of course, if you're talking about bills that were vetoed, we often bring back things that are line item vetoed that were vetoed before.
Madam Chair, were they vetoed in legacy funding or were they vetoed in bonding funding,
that
or what were they?
I can't tell you. I assume it would have been in bonding funding.
Okay. Well, I think that's interesting. If it gets vetoed in the bonding bill, we'll just use legacy money to put it back in a couple of bienniums later. Do you take into account things like the location of existing trails? Is it a designation as a regional trail? Do you take into account the number of bikers or walkers or skateboards in your analysis? I just find it interesting. Some of these weren't even on your radar screen. I'm wondering, do we have any kind of analysis? If they're not on your guys' radar screen and it's your job to figure this out, but we may know where it should go, do you not take into account like amount of use and stuff in what you're doing?
Well, Representative McNamara, we do take into account the proximity to population centers, which is one indicator of use. So one of our ranking criteria is this connected to a population center or a popular tourism destination, as a way to help decide, is this project better than that project? It's one of the factors that we would look at in ranking a project in our system.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Well, let me see if I'm understanding something I didn't understand before. This Sauk River Regional Park is something that it's my understanding that you funded before, so this is an extension of funding. Okay. Representative Ball.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess just to respond to Representative McNamara, You know, this is one public forum where people can come and give input. There are many public forums where people can give their input, and I don't want to speak for the decisions that were made, you know, in the past, but I do think, you know, and at least my opinion, what I try to do is take an active role in understanding, you know, what the merits are in each of every project. If previous decision was just to go and, you know, subvert that authority or that decision-making to other folks, I guess, you know, that was people's prerogative. But ultimately, the buck has to stop somewhere, and I think that it's appropriate for us to go and have some say and to go and fully understand the ramifications of what we're doing and to understand the merits of the projects. And like has been stated before, many of these are good projects that had gone through the process. The previous governor didn't have any incentive to go and invest in some of these things. He had ulterior, you know, ideas for what he thought the state should be focusing on or what he was focusing on. But that doesn't mean that these projects hadn't gone through the process. And so I want to make that clear that ultimately, you know, we can be as proactive as we want and as engaged in the process, or we can be as inactive as we choose to be. And it's my personal opinion, what I do, I'm not speaking for anybody else, but I try to be as knowledgeable and understanding and proactive in the process because I think that's part of my responsibility.
Did you have a question, Representative Torque?
Yes, I do, Madam Chair. It's to Representative Falk. Would you care to describe these projects in detail?
I think that is not something I would like us to spend our committee time on when we have a bunch of testifiers that are on the list. We can do that later when we don't have public time. We can ask Representative Falk to do that. But that's at this point, I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and I know other people would like to testify.
May I make a brief comment, Madam Chair?
Yes, absolutely.
We at the legislature have set up a number of advisory groups to help us do our work better, I believe. We can choose to work with them and come up with what we think are the best uses for these funds, or we can choose to cut them off at the knees and do whatever we think is best and play political games from biennium to biennium and year to year. And the result of that will be that instead of having a system where we work through people that are interested in their region and work in the areas that they understand, we will have a system where folks come to the chair and say, I've got a great project. And if they have the right relationship with the chair, the project gets on the list. I choose the former system, working through the boards that we've established, and if we have better ideas, let's go back to those boards and say, here's something you haven't considered. Would you reconsider your recommendation? What's wrong with that?
We're going to have a discussion about that later this evening, I think. And I'm happy to engage in it. I'm sure we're going to recall some past. With that, I don't see any other questions for you. We appreciate your testifying. I do have some other folks on the list that want to talk about the parks and trails issue. If they are here, I would like them to come now so we can keep the parks and trails together. I will be very careful to make sure we have equal time for water.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you. Is Joan Wilshire here? Mark Fleming? Yes, welcome.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the Commission. My name is Mark Themake, and I represent Scott County as their manager of the Regional Parks and Trails System. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Just testifying in regards to the sections related to the Metropolitan Council. As the committee might be aware of, there was a statute that was established that allocated the funding between the Metropolitan Park agencies by a formula. And this bill changes that process, although the projects identified in the bill are very, very similar, which is a good thing. The formula that was in, that's currently in legislation, distributes the money based on usage, population, and visitor data. So it looks at the agencies and all 10 of them and divides that money based on some factual data that we have. And as agencies, we work really hard to come up with that formula, and there was a lot of compromise. And Scott County is a little lower on that list, but that's okay. But because we understand that the needs are different. From that, those projects then, or those, that funding gets allocated based on that formula, and then it goes towards projects that the agencies have identified, and everybody moves forward. And we've delivered some really, really great outcomes over the past 3 years with these new funds. In Scott County, we opened a park in Prior Lake, so right near the core of the population, that had been undeveloped for 40 years as a result of the formula and the funding that, that came through the constitutional amendment. I really think that's what people voted for. One of the things that the formula that's in statute also provides is some funding for acquisition. There's this acquisition opportunity fund that's created through the Met Council. And from Scott County's perspective, that's really important to us. We're a smaller agency, of course. We get less of the big pot of money. But we're growing, and we have lots of opportunities for acquisition as we move forward. That fund is going to allow Scott County over the next year or so to acquire about 800 more acres that will be protected forever as for the region as the population grows, and that's really important. So those are my two comments. Hopefully there can be some consideration for reestablishing some funding for that acquisition fund in this bill. It currently isn't in there. Hopefully that could happen. And then I'd ask the committee to think about the return to using the existing formula that's in statute for distributing the money amongst the metro agencies.
Thank you for those comments. Are there questions, Representative McNamara?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I was not aware that this bill changed the formula for Met Council. I'm not sure this testifier, I just found out about early this morning this same percentage, and I need to know what the percentage is, how it was based to help. Maybe I'm speaking out of line. Maybe it's going to help Dakota County and Washington County, and I should be quiet and be glad that it got changed. But that was, again, to Representative Torkelson's point, this has been worked on a lot with a lot of interest groups in really tough issues that were resolved under three different chairs of the Legacy Committee. And I really am nervous about completely disrupting it, Madam Chair. So I believe Mr. Stefferud's in the audience. Again, I know you want to do all your public testimony, but at some point I'd like to hear. I have not seen a spreadsheet of what the new percentages are. I don't know if you want to give us those by tonight, but I'd like to know what this percentages are, who the winners are, losers, because these bills look completely different. Just got unveiled in a few hours ago, day and a half at the most. The changes are unbelievable, and we're trying to comprehend what happened here, how it happened, and why. And this I would like to understand. So whatever your timing is, if it's easier to wait till tonight and somebody can show us a spreadsheet of who the winners and losers are, what projects are picked and choose now instead of using priority lists. This is really serious. If we're actually going to vote on this tonight and cut up testimony in this committee and send this bill to somewhere else, let's at least know what the people are voting on. So if the people in the metro are giving more money to Dakota County, I want my Hennepin County people to know that I'm the winner in this. If the people in the metro are taking more money from Greater Minnesota, we need to know that. And we need to know if we're taking it from Greater Minnesota and not only giving it to Dakota County, but we're also going to take some away from Minneapolis then and give it to Dakota County. I want the people in the outstate to know that I'm their winner, because as Representative Falk said, it's our job to scrutinize this, and if we're going to scrutinize it and change it, let's be transparent and make sure everybody knows what they're voting on.
Representative Falk? Okay. Anybody else have questions? I don't see any other questions. Thank you for coming.
Thank you so much.
Is there anybody else here who would like to talk about the parks? Mm-hmm. I don't see anybody else. If somebody comes in before, we have a few more minutes for parks issues, I'd be glad to do that. So we'll go on to waters, because I do think there's some folks here who have come from out of state or out of state. So we will try to, we have Alan Peterson, who's president of the Irrigators Association of Minnesota. Would you like to come? And I see Mr. Meckle is in the room, so if members have questions for him, he will. He is available. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and the committee members for letting me speak. If you remember, I met you at the AgriGrowth Luncheon and introduced myself to you. I'm here both as the president of the Irrigators Association of Minnesota and as an irrigating farmer myself to address the committee about the proposed fee increase. On my farm alone, I paid a $1,680 fee for 2012. At the proposed fee increase, and I used gallons pumped, not permitted, so I'm not quite sure which one I was supposed to use, but I used gallons pumped. My fee would jump to $8,085, which is a good fourfold increase on that fee increase. Irrigating farmers are the only users listed that don't have a cap on that fee. Another question I would have is why we aren't using legacy funds to fund some of the monitoring wells and the research and so forth into aquifers. I think that a lot of people voted for the legacy fund and would think that that was a very worthy use of some of those dollars. As a farmer, as an irrigating farmer, we cannot pass this cost along. We are price takers, not price setters in our business. And so we would have to absorb that in the cost of doing our farming. As an Irrigators Association, I would rather see a flat fee rather than a per million gallons. As the rainfall comes and goes on years, there are certain years where we only pump a fraction of the water that we pumped last year during a drought year. And so the revenue generated, to me, is very unstable, because you could have years without generating very much revenue. Another consideration is that the water that irrigators use does not end up in New Orleans by, say, for instance, someone from the city who got up this morning, took a shower, the water goes down the drain into the wastewater system, into the treatment plant, into the river, which goes ends up in New Orleans. Irrigation, we pump it out on the land. The crop uses as much as it needs to, and the rest is there to replenish the aquifer if it's not used. We like to remind people that it costs money to irrigate, and we try not to waste any water or money, because that's what pumping excess water and so forth would do. I guess I'm about out of. I take any questions if anybody would like.
Well, let me start by commenting the reason that Mr. Meckle wasn't here earlier and is here now is because he was at the bonding committee, asking, supporting. I was. Better way to put it, a proposal before the bonding committee from Representative Fisher for $9.5 million from the bonding committee to do major monitoring wells. So the citizens of Minnesota in the entirety would participate in that monitoring system. So when you ask if there were additional monies, that's one place where hopefully that will be funded. I certainly support it. The other thing you asked about, legacy dollars, and we have put additional dollars in the legacy bill for water, work on waters. And I will, just off the top of my head, I will tell you about two. There's money for stream gauge monitoring, and that's one of the ways you can tell how, if your streams are drying up, you're drawing down too much water, kind of basically. And if I'm remembering the numbers right, it's $2.5 million at least for that. I'd have to go back and check, but there's substantial money there, and there's $7 million for water management areas, which will be helpful for some folks, regions where there are already conflicts because too much water is being used by maybe somebody and somebody else isn't getting their water. So the fairness issue, because we all, we're Minnesotans, we're fair. So there is money in the legacy bill. So when you talk about fee increase, it really is a three-part stool. Legacy money, bonding money. The bonding money is actually, the plan is to do that every bonding cycle so that we can complete a system in 10 years, which would mean about $9 or $10 million each biennium, so over the next 10 years. That might not even do it, but that is a huge bite. So it's not just one.
Okay.
So, yes, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Peterson, thanks for your testimony, and I appreciate your words that farmers try to be as efficient as they can be to keep their overhead costs as low as possible. And over the last few years, 5 or 10 years, a lot of advancements in technology have been made. Could you talk about just a couple of the things that the irrigators do to, again, lower their input costs and, in the long run, to save water when they apply irrigation water to their crops?
Low pressure irrigation comes the first thing that would jump right off the page. By DNR's own slides at our annual meeting, a lot of people like to compare last year with, say, 1988, which was a very major drought. And there are a significant number of more permittees pumping water now versus 1988, but yet the water use as a percentage did not go up near as much as the permits would show that it did. And that's because of the lot of farmers are converting to low-pressure irrigation rather than an irrigator needing a 100-horse pump and pumping at 100 to 120 PSI, which was some of the earlier systems. That same farmer could today pump with probably a 35 or a 40-horse submersible pump and run it at 30 to 35 PSI and get, instead of having to use 1,000 gallons a minute, that same low-pressure system, because the water is put out of the irrigator lower to the crop and so forth, you don't get as much evaporation and so forth from the high-pressure systems blew it up in the air, like the impact sprinkler heads all did, and you're not losing near the amount of water. And there's NRCS has been very good with their EQIP funds to assist farmers to convert that down. So you're saving water, and a 40-horse pump versus a 100-horse pump saves a lot of energy from the power companies. And so those are the first things that come to mind. Cover crops, minimum till, so that the ground isn't as bare as it used to be, and water isn't being wicked away by the sun and the wind and so forth, would be another tool to use for irrigating farmers.
We have a list. Representative Anderson was asking his question, I had an opportunity to look at the Clean Water Bill that is before this committee. And we are recommending, or the bill that I am carrying is recommending, $2.5 million each year. So that's $5 million for stream gauge monitoring. This is above the request that the governor made. So you will you can see that we are using the legacy fund. That is the legacy money.
I appreciate that.
Okay. Representative Kahn is next.
Yes. Sir, what I've seen these numbers somewhere, but I'm not sure what they are. What is the value, what is the increase in value of your crop grown on irrigated land versus non-irrigated land? And let's say an average year, last year, which wasn't totally a drought year in Minnesota, but wasn't a great year. What do you gain by irrigating the land and profitability of crop?
On my farm last year, my dryland corn ran from zero to 30, 35 bushel to the acre. My irrigated corn ran from 180 to 250 bushel to the acre on the same type of land.
Okay. Can you put that very roughly into dollars for us?
Okay, I gotta think.
Or just tell us what corn sold for last year.
Corn has been selling for anywhere up to $7 a bushel. Right now, it's down to $6. In the last week, it dropped a dollar.
Okay.
So, 200 bushel corn crop would generate $1,400 an acre gross before expenses. But don't forget that with the price of corn going up, so does every one of my expenses. I'm budgeting in about land costs, machinery costs, and everything. I'm budgeting in a good $900 an acre to put in an acre of corn for this year.
But, Madam Chairman, but again, that costs the same whether it's a dry, obviously then there are the expenses. I guess the point I'm making is that the expense of irrigating, even with the proposed fee structure, is a very small percentage of the increased profitability from an irrigated acre. And I think it's kind of, as we're trying to look at what costs are for people, I think that's an appropriate thing for us to consider.
The proposed fee increase, it fourfolds my cost for that permit to irrigate it. I guess as a farmer, I look at it as a little bit of maybe fairness. Are we the only ones that need to take a four or a five-fold increase on a fee versus other places when we can't pass that fee along?
Well, again, Madam Chairman, looking at as I live in downtown Minneapolis, so obviously. I'm not, the only thing I use water for is for household expenses. But we've paid an enormous amount, so it isn't what our water fee, but our water fees per use are much higher than anyone else's. And we've paid for the purification. We're not using groundwater. We're using water from the Mississippi. And we've paid an awful lot to do that. And I don't know, I think we've seen the chair who's much better at remembering any numbers than I can probably tell what my cost per gallon is for water that I'm using as compared to people in the rest of the state who are who haven't paid the base prices to do what I've paid for to get that source of water to my house.
And I can't address that. I don't
yeah.
live in a city and have right. no water bill. I have no comment on
sure.
that.
But I mean, the point I'm making is that we're all paying some differences in water fees, and I think a fee that dramatically increases the profitability of land ought to be much more tenable than other fees that we're doing for various reasons.
It's not all profit to irrigate land. In my county alone, my county taxes me more on an irrigated acre than a dry land acre, so my cost goes up even though I spend all the money to put the irrigation in. Then my annual cost for real estate taxes is up because of that. The land itself isn't any more valuable. It's the irrigator sitting on top of it that makes it that way, and I've paid for that and so forth, but the county still charges me more valuation on my land because it's irrigated.
So, just one last comment. So, I guess that's really good reason then for the state to also charge you more because it's irrigated for the amount of irrigation that you're doing.
Say that again, please.
Since, you know, the county is doing it, that's another good reason for the state to do it. The county has made that decision, and I guess that's a local-level decision, and you must keep re-electing the people who, or electing new people who don't change it. So I think it also shows that the state also has an interest in doing that.
Thank you. Representative McNamara is next.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Peterson, thank you for coming in, and as someone who actually likes to eat cornflakes, and I guess I got to be honest, I like frosted flakes because they're better for me than regular cornflakes. But I'm just curious, Representative Kahn makes a great point of irrigation versus non-irrigated land. Has the Irrigation Association ever computed how much more land would we need to plow up and put into corn if we quit irrigating? If we went back to the good old days, I kind of like that TV commercial where somebody says, I'd like to go back to the good old days. I think of Dakota County, of how much more productive our land is today. Have you ever computed, or does the association know how much prairie land and grasslands in our state would need to be plowed up to grow the same amount of corn that we're growing on less acres today? And if you haven't done that, it might be a good project for the association to do.
I ate my bowl of Frosted Flakes this morning, Representative. We, at the last board meeting, discussed that very situation about the economic impact of irrigation to the state of Minnesota. And we are looking into getting, hopefully, someone out of, we contacted someone at St. Cloud State University, and we're waiting for a call back to investigate that very scenario, what irrigation means to the state of Minnesota. I know there was a small study done many, many years ago, probably in the early 80s, that wouldn't be very effective to use in today's prices and so forth. Speaking just for my farm alone, and I've told many irrigation members as I talk to them, I do not think I'd be farming today if I wouldn't have had the ability to irrigate. In Sherburne County, where I live, the soil is very light, gravelly, like my dryland corn last year, the only reason I was able to use that corn is because I feed cattle also, and I was able to chop it for silage. The advantage of irrigation for me has allowed me to grow some specialty crops, seed corn for Wensman Seed Company out of Wadena. There's a green bean company from Arkansas that comes up and contracts land. I grow dark red kidney beans. Sweet corn, potatoes in the area. I'm not a potato farmer myself, but if you don't have irrigation, you cannot grow those crops. The seed corn company won't contract with you if you don't have an irrigated acre to do it with. The green bean company won't do it because of the dollars invested in those, and you know, those crops. So the value of irrigation to me is it's priceless. I don't know how I'd put a value on it. Because I'm positive I probably would not be farming without that.
Madam Chairman, can I rise to a point of order?
One point.
I just, one sentence. I want to note that Representative McNamara said something nice about me. First time ever.
Well, they agree on it.
That's the only point of order that we're going to allow in this committee, okay? Don't usually do points of order. Representative McNamara, did you want to follow
just
up?
Just a real short one. And Mr. Peterson, I didn't hear you talk about, the low-pressure emitters and the drop heads and how much more efficient that is in reducing evaporation and saving water. But I also think that folks should know about smart irrigators today. Today we have irrigators that are smart and actually water in appropriate spots more and less and use water. I think it's good as you work on your education that folks know irrigators today in this decade are not what we saw in the 70s and 80s. And this is so much better and a very positive thing. And the association should know and support the importance of monitoring wells so we know the impact on our groundwater. And I hope your association realizes the importance of that and finishing the geological atlas so that we can know what we're doing and that it is sustainable for your future generations, too. So yeah. Thank you.
As an Irrigators Association, we are not opposed to any monitoring wells and the monitoring of the groundwater levels. We've always been supportive of that. If you go on DNR's website, you can find the list of where all the monitoring wells are. At the moment, they're mostly located in the irrigated areas of the state. We think that as an Irrigators Association that having more wells will verify the fact that what we are pumping is sustainable of these aquifers, especially in the irrigated areas of the state. And so, no, we are not opposed to any monitoring wells. You know, the more the better. We think that's good for the state. It's good for the irrigators also. And the technology you're talking about is variable rate irrigation, which is a new technology. It's looks very promising. It's a little expensive at the moment, but the price, as technology always does, price will come down and hopefully make it affordable for more irrigators.
Mr. Peterson, the more you all have a conversation, the more you give me a chance to think of the things we've put in the legacy bill that will help you. And so now I have been reminded that we put in additional money above the governor for the geologic atlas to get that on a 10-year track, too. And that was that's been helpful to Sherburne County. So now, if my math is correct, we have now in the legacy our matching per year what we are asking for in the fee increase, the governor's fee increase. So they're just about at parity, I think. But you talk a little bit longer, and I may remember more. I don't eat cornflakes in the morning, so I haven't had that much sugar, and I'm not quite there yet. We're going to have four more questions here, and then we're going to move on to other testifiers. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In your area, are there new wells being dug to irrigate more acres?
I believe there is. I haven't applied for any myself, but I believe there is in Sherburne County.
And thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Peterson, are the new wells being dug? Are they going deeper?
No.
They're all basically at the same depth.
I haven't heard of, you know, and it all varies. You know, I have wells from anywhere for irrigation from 52 feet to 99 feet deep. Just depends on, you know, where we drill the well, where that water table is and so forth is that. I have not heard of anybody having to drill deeper to find water in my area at all.
Okay, thank you.
Sherburne County is one of the areas of concern, however. So, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment on Representative Kahn, her statements. And I know you dabble in agriculture. You raise chickens, so you're a little bit involved in ag.
But there's
a lot of water. But to kind of go down the road of justifying this fourfold rate increase on $7 corn is not the correct way to go here. And just a quick lesson, Mr. Peterson said his input costs for this year are pretty much locked in at $900 an acre. And we don't have $7 corn anymore. It's under $6, and the new crop price is falling as we speak. And I've heard marketers say we could be looking at, if we have an average year with rainfall across the country, $3 to $4 corn by this fall. So at his yield of 200 bushels an acre times $3 a bushel, we're looking at $600 an acre gross profit. At $4 an acre, we're looking at $800 an acre gross profit. That's a loss of $100 an acre. And those are real dollars for this year. So this looking at $7 corn to partially justify this large rate increase. Farming is cyclical. We had it for a couple of years. It was good, at least for those of us selling corn. But those in it for the long term realize that we aren't going to be seeing $7 corn for much longer or any longer.
Representative Hansen, you grow corn too.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Peterson, I
I know the corn price has dropped because I still have quite a bit in the bin. But I was just doing my taxes. They're not quite done yet, and all these costs. So the new technology, that's, if you do an irrigation system, is that a capital expense that you can deduct on your income tax? Are the, is all the mechanism, are the wells, are the property taxes, are the fees, are those all deductible on your income tax?
Yeah, the cost of an irrigation system and the well, you would probably put on a depreciation sheet and deduct that. The cost of the fee is a direct expense right off the farm. You know, any of the costs of, you know, the electric bills and the repairs and so forth are a direct expense.
Madam Chair, so all of those are, as the cost of doing business, those are taken off the top in terms of gross is, some of the grosses that Representative Kahn or Representative Anderson were talking about, they come off and lower that net tax burden on the income taxes. That's correct.
Representative Dills, the last question before we go on to the next witness.
I don't really have a question. I wanted to talk about the sustainability of what the farmers are doing. Firstly, according to the USDA, the per acre since 1980, the number of bushels per acre on corn across the country in 1980 was 91, and in 2010 was 153 bushel to the acre. And that goes directly to, I believe it was Representative McNamara's question or statement about how many acres that we're putting into production. When you look at the land use during that same period, according to farmerfieldofmarket.org, the land use itself has gone down 37%. And as we spend money on legacy to help keep our water quality good, to keep and increase ditch buffers and all the things that we're doing here to make things good for us and to retain groundwater and to recharge the aquifers, I think it's important to recognize that irrigation is important to crops, important to farmers, and that, in fact, irrigation use has gone down 27% in the last 27 years, but the crop yield has exploded. And so I'm all about, I want to make sure that we do have sustainable water supplies, and that's what we're here, but I just continue to feel like the farmer is a vilified individual here because they use a lot, but they produce a lot, and we don't produce enough because there's people starving in this world that we could be feeding if we could produce more and even be more efficient. So, I mean, there's some compelling reasons to think that irrigation is good and that we should keep the price as reasonable as possible, if for any other reason versus sustainability, that we can afford the food when we do buy it in the so quickly to run down land use in that 20-year period from is down 37%. Energy use is down 37% as well. Irrigation is down 27%, and soil loss, interestingly enough, is down 70%. So, I mean, I sense as a farmer and farmers that they're doing the right things and that we just got to be really cognizant of them regardless of what we end up charging for water.
Thank you. And thank you, Mr. Peterson, for coming. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee, for this opportunity.
I still have some folks on the list. Greg Jans, dairy farmer from Grove City, Minnesota. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Greg Jans, and I'm a dairy farmer from Grove City, Minnesota, which is in Meeker County. And I also serve as a director for Minnesota Milk. And I just wanted to bring up some concerns that some of our members have with this fee increase. And I guess one of the questions I have is I've seen a lot of spreadsheets with what the increase would be with the new rate, and that was using $15 per million, but yet the bill says $35 a million. So
it depends on there are four different rates, so we can for one, I see Mr. Meckel is here, and he can sit down with you afterward and figure out which one yours would be.
So when I'm using some of these numbers, I didn't know which one to use. So
okay.
Surprisingly enough, I did not know that so many of our members had a appropriation permit for water, but a lot of our dairy farmers do that don't even have irrigation. And I happen to have irrigation, but I don't need one for my dairy for water use there, so I must fall underneath a low enough category. I don't know how that breaks down. But anyway, I'm going to use one dairy farmer that called the other day as an example for him. He has about a 1,500-cow dairy, and he has a water permit, and he said he uses roughly 50 million gallons a day. And at that...
50 million a day?
A year, excuse me, a year. A year.
Okay.
Get my numbers right here. Yeah, that would not be good.
That would be good.
So anyway, his fees, if it did relate to that $35, would be $1,750 a year, which would be almost a 10-time full rate, because he's at the low rate of 140 right now, just the permanent level. And the other thing about it is that in the bill, and I think it's in section one, line paragraph G, it says there's also a $75 per million gallon additional fee, surcharge fee, for the 4 months of the summer, if the monthly pumping rate is greater than January. I guess it's 5 months out of the summer. Well, that's a big usage rate on a dairy, because we're using water to cool the cows with, and they're also drinking more. So if that's the way that works out, that's another, you know, it excludes irrigation, but it says nothing about animal agriculture there. So that would be a substantial amount of money, and I got my numbers all added up here, right? That would add, you know, come up to over $3,000 total increase in fees, about $3,400 or something increase in fees, if that would apply to, and it would, we would fall into that category on the dairies. And the most of our water is reused or captured in our lagoon, so it isn't, like Alan said, it's not going down the rivers. We're reusing it. We're either knifing it back into the land, but the only water that leaves is in the form of milk. So we're recapturing, reusing it for different cleanups and stuff throughout the day. So I think to us, if you're looking at it as just a fee, so if you're a suburbanite and you pay a water fee, you think, okay, I'm going to compare this to this fee. But our water fees includes we put in our own wells, do our own pumping. So we got all those fees that are covered in your water fees. So it's always been that it's city water is cheaper than rural water, just before the fact that as we get put individual wells in and stuff. So our cost per gallon of water is more than probably a city fee is for your drinking water.
I think we're going to have you check with Mr. Meckel to go over numbers with you, but I can promise you my water is much more expensive than yours. I am a city resident. We use the Mississippi River, and with all the pollution in the Mississippi, it costs my city a lot of money to clean it up so it's drinkable. If somebody can go on a well and into the aquifer, it's different. So, and in the city, we're going to, one of the things that we have been discussing in this committee is that more and more of us in the metropolitan area are going to have to use river water because the aquifer is not big enough. So this does affect all of us. And Mr. Meckel, if you could just raise your hand, he's going to talk to you after, because I think some of the fees, to help you work through the fee structure on an individual basis. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the testifier. And he brings up a great point, and it comes down to this. In agriculture, can you truly pass on the additional cost to the end user of your product? And the answer is no. I mean, truly, it would be great in agriculture if we, as farmers, could get paid for actual cost of production. Who does it benefit? The cheap food prices that we have here in the United States, who does it benefit? The farmer? No. It benefits every single person in this room. It benefits every single one of our constituents. You know, we pay, what, 10 to 25% of our income on food here in the United States, when many other countries are paying up to 80% of their income for that. And think about it. We have to double our food supply in the world, double it in 37 short years. And if we don't embrace high-yielding methods for agriculture, we're going to have to allow one of two things to happen. We're either going to have to plow up critical habitat, or we're going to have to allow even more people in the world to starve to death. So no question there, but just a comment. I want to thank the testifier for coming out. Thank you for everything that you do. It is a noble profession, and thank you.
Yep.
Thank you so much, and okay. I want to make sure that Mr. Meckel speaks with you afterward.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay, and now Michael Schmidt from Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. And after he's there, I don't have anybody else on the, David Wagner would be next.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee members. I'm here to speak on 641, the Delete Everything Amendment. My name is Michael Schmidt. I work on water quality issues for the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. We appreciate the leadership that the chair has shown in putting together a comprehensive bill to allocate the clean water funds for the next biennium. We haven't had a great deal of time to review it, but we appreciate the special consideration for groundwater that the bill contains, because that is a critical issue, as we are hearing today and have heard in this committee before. I would note that the constitutional language passed by the voters in 2008 does include groundwater, so we need to be sure to consider that as we allocate the clean water fund. The Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy has worked on water quality issues for years, and we strongly support the ongoing water quality monitoring and cleanup plan development that is included in the bill before us. And we have also learned that the needs for non-point sources or non-point source pollution reductions are enormous, and could easily occupy all of the Clean Water Fund just because the need is so large. So I want to hit just a couple of highlights about the bill, or highlight a few points that we've seen. First, we appreciate the targeted action for septic systems. That's been an ongoing concern for MCEA, because there are tens of thousands of imminent threats to public health and safety as defined by state law. And right now, we are not on track to clean those up in a very timely manner. So we appreciate the focused effort to get that done, because this should be a one-time expense to find and correct all of the outdated systems that do not provide treatment for water or for the wastewater that results. Second, we appreciate the support for the Great Lakes funding. This is a very important initiative to clean up Lake Superior, an icon for Minnesota. And the area of concern in the St. Louis River estuary is one of the largest and most complicated areas of concern. It's essentially a hazardous waste area that needs treatment, and this leverages federal money so that we can get that done. Third, we appreciate the support that the bill provides to encourage counties to update their shoreland rules. The existing shoreland rules have been around for a long time, and MCEA has participated in stakeholder processes and other discussions about trying to get those updated so that we can deal with 21st century problems in an updated shoreland rule. One concern we have is the cut, or the level of cut to non-point source funding, because as I mentioned before, this is a major issue for Minnesota. A lot of our surface water pollution comes from non-point sources, and so that's a very significant issue, and we need to target our funding to make sure that we get the most effective outcomes from any money that we spend to reduce non-point sources. And any cuts in implementation funding will essentially result in more non-point source pollution, because we aren't getting it cleaned up as quickly as we otherwise would. One other point is that the ag certification language in the bill we think could be strengthened. It's a little bit difficult to evaluate when we haven't seen the analytical tool that's going to be used to to determine whether a particular farm is certified. But we have advocated to the Commissioner of Agriculture for a 5-year certification period rather than a 10-year period, and also to incorporate the effects of hydrologic change across the state and to have well-defined program measures and outcomes for the program. So those are all of my comments. Thank you, Madam Chair, and the committee for allowing me to share our concerns and thoughts and areas of support on House File 641, the Delete Everything 2 amendment.
Thank you. Representative McNamara, did you have a question?
Yes, I did, Madam Chair. Thank you. Mr. Schmidt, thank you for coming in. I'm just curious, you talked about some of your support for the different things in the bill. Do you support the reductions, the cuts to Bowser for the on-the-ground work that's in this bill from the governor's recommendation?
Well, as I mentioned, we are very concerned that the major cuts to the non-point source area will basically slow down the implementation on the ground, and so that will not lead to cleaner water as quickly for surface water.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, the other unrelated question, as opposed to spending a couple million dollars on shoreline rules, why don't you advocate and why don't we just fix the shoreline rules? Do you really think giving a few dollars to somebody out on Lake Minnetonka is going to get them to quit mowing the grass down to the water?
We have been advocating for updated shoreline rules for a long time and are continuing to do that. And we think a comprehensive statewide solution would be a great way to do that. We just think if that isn't going to happen, we need to encourage counties in other ways too. So we are trying to get that done in any way that it can be done.
Representative Torkelson, then I want to make sure we have time for additional testimony. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I won't try not to take too much time. I'd like to hear more about your perspective on the Ag Water Certification Program, how you think it's going to come together, and how you think it might actually work.
Well, that's a little bit hard to say because it's still in the development process. A member of the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy did sit on the Technical Advisory Committee and provided input, but we don't really know exactly how it will work, and we still have concerns that it addresses all of the issues that we raised with the Commissioner of Agriculture, including the things that I mentioned, having a shorter timeline, including hydrologic change in the analytical tool, and making sure that there are well-defined program measures and outcomes.
Thank you,
Madam Chair.
Again.
Just a quick follow-up. Part of this program is certainty. You're recommending a shorter time frame of certainty. What are we getting certainty from?
Well, I believe in the language of the bill, it describes describes that. I guess it's from the...
Let me help out here. The certainty is that the certification remains for the time allowed for the 10 years. It is 10 years in the bill, and the certification cannot be taken away from the farmer if the farmer is following the practices that the farmer and the Department of Ag agreed to in contract.
Oh. Wow. You've redefined the program, Madam Chair.
That is the way the statute reads. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Or the bill, not the statute. David Wagner. And just before you speak, is there anybody else in the audience who would like to testify? I just don't want to miss anybody. One more? Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is David Wagner. I work for St. Paul Regional Water Services, but today I'm representing the American Water Works Association. I'm the chair of our Water Utility Council with American Water Works Association. And we represent basically the water providers in the state of Minnesota and the related industry to the water providers in the state. Just a couple of quick comments. Certainly we support and share the goals of the DNR that's being proposed under this program. We would question, however, that, you know, we're certainly paying appropriation fees now. And what are those appropriation fees going for now? Also, could other funds be used? I guess we'd ask if other funds could be used to support the projects that are listed there, Clean Water Legacy funds or other. So that's really all I had to say.
Members, do you have questions? So help me out here. Oh, yes, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a follow-up on your comments on the voluntary certification program and what that certification entailed. Would a farmer be exempt from any township, county, or watershed regulations in that 10-year period if any new ones were enacted?
The way I understand it, and I will have an amendment tonight that says ordinance or rule, and that was it. We cannot, sitting here, say that a next legislature can't change the rules. We can't do that. That's just not our prerogative. However, our prerogative is that we can say, and the department can write a contract with a farmer, and that contract can say that if you are following what we agreed to, you got some EQIP money, for example, and you agreed to some practices, and we're going to work with you, and we're going to give you technical advice, and we're going to give you other support. Once that all happens and there's an agreement, and they've got a written agreement, then the Department of Agriculture cannot take away their certification. So they can advertise themselves as certified for that 10-year period. And actually, I think it's written so it can be extended, though I'm not up on that. Representative Anderson.
But again, Madam Chair, when we tell a farmer he's going to be exempt from rules and statutes for 10 years...
We can't tell them that.
We can't?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Hamilton, first of all, I think we have a witness up here. Does anybody have a question for our witness? I don't see any. Thank you so much. We have a couple more people who would like to testify, and because we have time to have discussions among ourselves later. We're going to get all our testimony done this morning. Mr. Jasky, would you like to come up? And was there somebody else who wanted to testify to? Ms. Bucks, you can come up too. We have 5 more minutes. And you can share the time equally. Oh.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members. John Jasky, Director, Board of Water and Soil Resources. The few comments I'd like to make, and I made a few of them to you earlier, have to do with the Clean Water Fund bill, and as was mentioned by a previous testifier, the proposed reduction of $22 million in the non-point projects and practices that would be the things that improve our surface and groundwater. That reduction or change from the governor's proposal is going to set us back if we don't have the resources to do the storage, the treatment, to protect and preserve and restore those groundwater resources and our surface water resources. And since the time that we've last been before you presenting our budget, you know, there's been evolution on both policy and practice in terms of getting these projects identified, knowing the need, knowing the benefits, knowing the outcomes. I don't want to rehash all of that because that would take way too much time, but we've invested many, many millions in the science to know what to do and where to do it. Having the resources not available to do anything about it is not going to move us forward in getting our water cleaner. we've made great strides in making sure that those resources that have been put into the science are going to be useful and used. Policy passed last year, and some being proposed this year, I think, would accelerate that. But without the resources to put onto the ground, none of it will become reality. And yesterday, I met with commissioners of DNR and pollution control and agriculture and renewed our commitment to the governor's recommendations and specifically to the importance of the non-point source funding to get the projects and practices on the ground to clean up our surface and groundwater.
Thank you. Representative Paul.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move approval of the minutes from the April 2nd meeting.
Representative Falk has made a motion to approve the minutes. I don't see any. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? The minister approved. Welcome to the committee.
Welcome, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Leanne Buck. I'm the Executive Director for the Minnesota Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts. Again, we do appreciate the work. This legacy amendment and dollars are very important to the whole entire state. And so, again, thank you for your strategic discussions with that. Our concern would be, obviously we're concerned with the amendment because it's specifically the $22 million reduction to Governor Dayton's recommendation to the Board of Water and Soil Resources funding. We understand the importance of groundwater, and we also understand the importance of surface water. And so with that, we're looking at this, the amendment that we see, the way it looks, it is reducing non-point implementation practices on the ground projects. And it shifts the funding into studies, assessment, larger state staffing, and larger state government. And so as we're looking at that, again, we're seeing it as getting the job on the ground is critical for the state's water quality goals. And so again, we support a very balanced approach to the science, the research, and the assessments that are out there. In our shop, we like to call it somewhat of a shift, maybe. You know, we want to avoid shifts from working lands to land retirement. We know there are other areas. Yesterday it was, or 2 days ago, I apologize, it was referenced at Bowser, well, they might be getting more money in the legacy funds. And again, that tends to be land retirement. So we're trying to balance it also with the workload that both Bowser and local government does with what I would call working lands, that farming, agriculture, forestry, and of course, community land. And again, we saw the clean water funds as an investment into the surface water and non-point practices. And we realize that you have the opportunity and you're gaining, and again, the groundwater issue. But again, I just want to go on record that we don't want it seen to be done at the loss of getting those on the project ground. Sometimes I look at that as, you know, a lot of the assessment, the work, I guess the question I have at the end of the day, I sat yesterday and looked up the general fund account from 2006 and also then the general fund pie chart. And when we have 0.8% left of the, you know, of funding for the general fund that goes to both agricultural and environment, I wonder sometimes if we're so busy looking at all these different accounts that we miss the bigger picture of how we can make some larger investments in general fund appropriations. So again, I do understand the groundwater. At the same time, Bowser has asked us, and as local government, I believe on the books, there's $243 million worth of projects that local government's ready to look at, and that leverages another $110 million. So again, as soil and water districts, we're looking at doing what you want. We're targeting, we're doing competitive process, we're increasing our reporting, we're increasing our auditing, we're looking at recording those desired outcomes, we're doing partnering, we're doing leveraging, we're doing this all on voluntary practices. So again, thank you for the consideration, and again, that's where our concern is. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for bringing up the word balance, because that is the hardest thing for us to achieve, and that is what we're looking for. Members, we will reconvene. We are adjourning, not adjourning, we are going into recess, and we will reconvene here at 6 o'clock. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to make sure that I'm assuming that we're going to be here very late tonight, and I want to make sure that DNR, MPCA, I appreciate Director Jasky coming up, but I had asked before to get the changes from this bill from the governor's recommendations, and I will ask tonight, Madam Chair, for the agencies to come forward and walk through the bill line by line with all the changes, all the language changes in the bill from their agency recommendations, so that we all know what's actually in this bill, because it's changed so much in a matter of hours from what we had seen, that I think it's going to be important for the agencies to let us know what they have in this bill that's different than their recommendations, and that they will tell us if they support them. So as they walk through them tonight, Mr. Kadelka or Mr. Meyer, Director Jasky, or whoever's going to come, can be prepared to go through the bill, their sections of the bill, and let us know if they support the changes, what the impacts are, what work's going to now get done that wouldn't get done, and what work is not going to get done that you had proposed to do, so that everybody in this committee can know what we're voting on.
Representative McNamara, I think you are making a good political statement here. You asked the agencies to write down and make comparison sheets. I think each of the agencies has done that, and that is in people's members' packets. I hope members take an opportunity to read the to read everything, so because we are going to be voting on this bill tonight, and we will be voting at 9 o'clock, no, later than 9 o'clock. We'll have 3 hours for debate, and because we have finished our testimony from the public, we'll vote at 9. There are very few amendments, and just for the audience to know, most of the amendments are small. There are two amendments, one to go to the governor's recommendations for the original governor's recommendations for parks and trails, and the other is for the original governor's recommendations for the Clean Water Fund, which I'm thrilled to see that the Republicans have now accepted the full funding of the Governor's Certainty Project. That is real progress here. I'm glad to see that, and we will have a discussion tonight, and with that, we are in recess.
We'll call the meeting back to order. We will need to conclude a piece of business from this morning. We had House File 1679 before us. That was the water fees. We have concluded business on that. So that bill will be laid over for possible inclusion. With that, that bill is laid over. Representative Wagenius, would you like to move your bill, House File 641?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will move House File 461 be recommended to pass. 641. I'm sorry. Recommended to pass and sent to the Legacy Committee.
Members, that motion is before us. And Representative Wagenius, I believe you have an amendment to
your
bill.
I do have an amendment. House File A7, and I'd like to move it. And just let me tell you a little bit, a lot of numbers, but not so much work here. When I was doing the bill, I gave a something to the PCA twice, and caught the mistake when somebody asked the question, what was the $375,000 for? And it didn't say anything in there about, it was very general language. And so I realized as soon as the PCA explained it, we were carrying that twice. So what this amendment does is take that double money and reallocate it, and so $100,000 is to PCA in each year, and then $500,000 is to Bowser in each year, and then there were some technical amendments in here that was. That's the substantive amendment. There were some suggestions for in the how PCA requests a proposal for SSTS money. So that's line Representative Dill's suggestion, and that's on line 1.14. There were other suggestions on 1718 for how the shoreline rules are to be done. And then Representative Dill had a suggestion, and that's 1.21, 1.26, and that is, again, for the shoreline, making sure that if somebody is doing a really good job but doesn't follow the dot, every dot of the I on the 1 to 6, they are still eligible for the money. And that is that. And then there were, we added on 2.5, we expanded the language a little bit from drainage to soils. And in the 2.7, that is just a technical correction. And with that, that's the amendment, members. I'd be glad to take questions.
Thank you, Representative Wagenius. I understand this is fairly technical in nature. Do we have questions to it? Representative McNamara.
Mr. Chair, I was having a really hard time hearing, but we are on the A7.
That is correct.
And Representative Wagenius, when did we get this amendment?
Representative Wagenius.
Sometime last night. I mean, it has met the 24-hour rule, if that's your question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative McNamara.
And Representative Wagenius, did you say the net where all these numbers are listed, is there only... How much money is being shuffled around total, did you say, new money?
Okay.
Representative Wagenius.
When we took the money from PCA, where I had doubled up, and it was my mistake, we gave $100,000 in each year to PCA for a place where they felt that they were shorted. And I think that's legitimate, and this is getting it in line with the governor's recommendations. And it is then $500,000 in each year goes to Bowser.
Does that answer your question, Representative McNamara?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. All those in favor of the A7 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Representative Wagenius, I believe you have another amendment.
Thank you. This amendment is from the Department of Agriculture. They thought a clarification, the money is the same. There is really no intention of the same. It is just language that they thought was clarifying. Oh. And I would move the A9 amendment.
The A9 amendment is before us. Members, do you have questions to that? I believe this is a non-controversial amendment. Seeing no questions, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. The A9 amendment is adopted. Let's see here. I have the A6 amendment. This is a small appropriation off the bottom line. To appropriate $25,000 to go and study the impacts on groundwater or the water quality impacts of hard rock aggregate mining near the headwaters of the Minnesota River. This is one of the things that we have some concerned citizens about, some proposed mining operations and how it's going to affect their drinking water or their water supplies. And one of the things that we have been focusing on is groundwater impacts, and this would give some time for these folks to figure this out. And I guess if people have questions, I would try to do this, answer them. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I see at the end of the amendment that it prevents any permits from going through. Are there any permits in process at this time that this amendment will interfere with?
there is potential for a mining operation. I don't know if any permits have been issued, but what the citizens who live in the area want to know is if, specifically with these hard rock mining issues, if you break through certain levels of the rock, that you can dewater wells, and they want to make sure that their wells are going to be protected before they allow the project to move forward. And that's one of the things that there's been a significant amount of citizen opposition and just questions, and I think it's important that first and foremost we make sure that people's wells and drinking water is protected before we go and permit something. This is also pretty close to the Big Stone Wildlife National Refuge project. That's a federal project, but we've also spent a significant amount of money to try to protect and enhance and restore the Minnesota River, and I think it's best before we add additional potential problems that we understand the impacts. So that's what this is doing. Representative McNamara. Or excuse me, Representative Torkelson, did you have... I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like the DNR to come forward. This looks like a moratorium to me, and I would like to know if there are permits in process. And, you know, I believe the permitting process does protect our groundwater in its current state, so I don't see any need for a moratorium, and I'd like to hear more about it.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. Steve Hirsch, DNR Ecological and Water Resources Director. Mr. Chairman, Representative Torkelson, we wouldn't be permitting the actual mine itself. We don't. That would be a local unit of government that would do a conditional use permit for aggregate mining. I do not know if there's any pending water permits for any mining in this area. I could certainly find out. The one thing I would point out is if it's an evaluation of water quality impacts, that would seem like it would be more in the purview of PCA and not DNR.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'd like to have PCA up then. Thank you, Mr. Hirsch.
Mr. Kudelko, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. We too would have to go back to our staff and find out if there's any permitting operations in this area, and have to get back to you.
Thank you.
Representative Torkelson.
Mr. Chair, I asked you earlier if you were aware of any permits in process, so you didn't really answer my question.
There's a proposed project. I don't know if any permits have been applied for. There are a number of citizens who are most impacted by this. They want to know what the potential impact could be on their wells. This is kind of a local issue to the headwaters in Big Stone County slash the western part of Swift County. It's been an issue for a number of my constituents, and it's one of the things that they'd like to have at least somebody take a look at and to understand if they're going to have to go and have new wells drilled before we should be allowing a project to proceed.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. It'd be nice to have some more information on this, but we're not going to get it tonight.
Representative Wagenius, do you have a comment? All right. All those in favor of the... Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry, Representative McNamara. I didn't see a Hackford there.
As long as you're in such a hurry, I want to move for a roll call. I would like to make an oral amendment to delete the sentence that begins on line 1.12 with the word until and goes down to line 1.1.
Representative McNamara, would you mind speaking in your microphone?
Yep. I'd like to move to delete, beginning on line 1.12, the sentence that begins with until and continues down until line 1.17 ends with capitalized word river. I believe that's all one sentence. Ms. Taylor could correct me if I read that wrong, but I'd like to move to delete that, orally delete that sentence, ask for a roll call, and I'd like to speak to the amendment.
Roll call has been requested. Representative McNamara.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to know, is there a definition for hard rock aggregate mining in statute?
Okay. Mr. Chairman?
Representative Kahn?
Just a point of order. Do we have 24-hour rule or something like that for amendments?
We do have a 24-hour rule for amendments. I guess if you folks had the chance to see this, this had been submitted by deadline, so if they wanted to go and offer those amendments, they had the ample time to get them submitted to the committee. Representative Kahn,
are you pointing to me that we should not be able to offer a one-sentence deletion of an oral amendment?
Well, as you know, Representative McNamara, because you've dealt with me over the years, I'm not a big believer in rules, but once we have them, you know, I'm just interested in other people who may be. So if we're going to do things informally, maybe a reason to do them informally. And one of the reasons I don't like these rules is that I actually like to have committee work going on. I think that that's where we look at bills and where we make changes and where someone says something and then someone says something after that person says it. But I'm not in charge of this committee. These aren't mine. I just have been brought up so that if there is a rule, I think it ought to be addressed, and I'm just asking it as a question. And for example, when you do something that you may say is just deleting one line, it significantly changes what the author of the amendment who put it in intended to do. And, you know, then to call for a roll call vote in committee too, it's not quite like a real friendly action. So I'm not ruling on this. I'm just asking it as a question. And I know you are much more interested.
Representative McNamara.
Mr. Chair, I'll remove my amendment to the amendment, keep the roll call, and ask you if you have a definition for new hard rock aggregate mining on line 1.15. If there is a definition in statute for that, does that extend to any township that's mining gravel to keep a local road project within budget? Or what is hard rock mining, if I'm not mistaken, is just rock crushing?
Representative McNamara, this is meant to address the mining of granite at the headwaters of the Minnesota River. That is the intention. This is a local issue that has been brought to my attention numerous times, and this is something that citizens are very concerned about with respect to how a potential action could affect their drinking water and whether or not they would be liable to go and have to go and drill new wells. This is one of the things where these wells, especially when you're drilling through layers of hard rock, can be a bit more expensive than in other places, and they want to know whether or not their drinking water will be protected. That is the reason for bringing it forward. As good as my memory is, it is not perfect, so I would have to ask staff if there is a defined definition of the part you asked about. I could go to Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm not aware of a definition. I'm not going to guarantee there isn't one, but I'm not aware of one at this time. I could get back to the committee.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And as you probably know, in Big Stone County, they actually make aggregate out of granite. And actually, granite is the definition for most of our aggregate source that we come from. They're aggregate rocks. When we call them boulders, they're actually granite boulders, even though we don't think of them. We think of granite as coming from St. Cloud. The boulders that we have in the Dakota County area where I grew up are actually granite boulders.
We have many types of igneous rocks. Yeah, that is correct.
Yeah. And so they're hard rock. They're very hard. You try and bite one sometime. Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask you, is there a definition for headwaters of the Minnesota River? Would that include any water that flows into the Minnesota River? What is this? What area geographically is this moratorium for?
Representative McNamara, it is for the headwaters of the Minnesota River in Big Stone County, which is where the Minnesota River originates, coming out of Big Stone Lake.
And where does it say Big Stone County in the amendment?
Representative McNamara, you can read as well as I can. It does not say Big Stone County there, but if you look at a map, you can see where the headwaters or where the origination point of the Minnesota River is. If you would like to add further clarification and you have some language, that's one thing perhaps that we could consider.
Unfortunately, Mr. Chair, I had thought about that, but I remember you just ruled me out of order for any oral amendment. So we'll go by your rule, and I'll just ask for a roll call. Thank you for your help.
I did not rule you out of order. I did not rule on the point of order at all. And I think that you actually withdrew your oral amendment, and I just want to make sure that the record is clear there. Representative Keel, you were next on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just was curious. You said this was a really big issue in your district. I was wondering if there were any testifiers that were going to address it.
Representative Keel, I didn't ask anyone to make the three-hour trip tonight. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I think this has kind of come up once before, and I just have to ask respectfully, you mentioned this is a local issue. Why wouldn't the county or a township put into effect a local moratorium instead of having the legislature do this for, what you say is a local issue? I just don't understand.
Well, Representative Anderson, it's one of the things that some constituents asked me to do, and I do think that they have some concerns. There have been some issues with respect to this potential project as to jurisdiction, whether it's within city limits or within the township or whether it would fall within the county. So I think there's some confusion there as to who would have the authority to issue the permit. But the concern is if a permit is issued and there's impact to their drinking wells, who is going to pay for it? Would they have to go and, I mean, if you've got a number of folks, this is out in a rural part, that have their wells go dry because you break through a level of hard rock, is the one that caused that impact liable to fix it, or are they liable to fix it? And we don't understand just how much, how far down you could go before you potentially have an issue. And I just think that with the level of concern that was expressed to me, that these folks are sharing that I think we should maybe proceed cautiously to make sure that somebody's well doesn't go dry at an inopportune time just because of the actions of another. We want to make sure that people do have access to water. Yes, Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Mr. Chair. But again, it's in Big Stone County, and I would think the commissioners there could rule on this. And I would assume any mining company would be bonded to cover some of these things. So again, I would just advise the chair that this should be a local issue.
Yeah, Representative Anderson, I know that we have different rules in different counties, and I'm not sure of the bonding requirements required. I think that's additionally one of the issues. If you do have a company come in and there ends up being a significant impact and they end up leaving, then who is stuck fixing the problem? Because you could attempt to start a mining operation, end up causing a significant dewatering of folks, and just decide it's not worth your money to go and mitigate the problems to redrill wells to make sure. And so then who ends up getting stuck? It's either the township, potentially the city, the county, or the individuals get stuck with the cost of fixing that problem. Perhaps, I mean, I should have maybe asked people to take the drive down, but I know it's a fairly significant haul from just about South Dakota to come down for potentially something that is a very small local issue. And I think that, you know, this isn't too much to ask, just to make sure that folks' drinking water is protected. Representative Dill.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I think we're in a trap here because the amendment would be a heck of a lot better. I mean, Representative Anderson just said that he said, and I quote, "I know this is in Big Stone County." Well, this amendment isn't Big Stone County. This amendment is the headwaters of Mississippi, and until I can see a map of what that encounters,
Minnesota.
The Minnesota River.
Or Minnesota River, I'm sorry. Until I can see a map of that or a definition of that, that could be, I don't know how many counties that is. So I'm going to vote no until it gets done right. And I'm not against the idea of what you're trying to promote, but I'm going to be voting no until we can make it a reasonable amendment to make this right. I know you didn't rule, so maybe you can make the amendment to Big Stone County and you won't have to worry about it. And I'll vote yes.
Representative Dill, would you be amenable if I was able to include Big Stone County?
Ms. Chair, you'll have to rule on your own motion.
Well,
there wasn't a motion, or there wasn't a ruling on whether or not oral amendments were in order. I want people to understand that a point of order was raised, but there was no ruling on the point of order.
So I would suggest, Mr. Chairman, that you put Big Stone County in it.
Representative Kahn?
Well, I would, you know, again, I don't set these rules, and I don't know how we do them, but I would think something as clarifying as adding the name of a county to something that's probably clearly defined as where the headwaters of the Minnesota River is should be able to be done without objection of anyone on the committee.
Right. I mean, thank you, Representative Conner. We could ask the department to come down and clarify where the headwaters of the Minnesota River are. If they would like to do that, it is out of Big Stone Lake in Big Stone County. That's where the Minnesota River originates. If somebody from the department, I mean, would that, Representative Dill, would that satisfy your request?
I'm not sure, and I think you request them to come down. Don't ask them if they'd like to.
Would the department come down to clarify the question before us? Mr. Hirsch, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, but without looking at a map, I can't tell you where the headwaters, where the boundaries of the headwaters of the Minnesota River. Yes.
Mr. Hirsch, do you have someone from the department that... I mean, I could pull up a map on my iPad, but...
That's what we're doing.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Dill.
Well, thank you. On line 1.7, after the word mining, in Big Stone County, on the headwaters of the Mississippi River.
Minnesota.
Or Minnesota River.
Yes.
Sorry about that. I worry about the Mississippi.
I am willing to incorporate that into my amendment if it would please the committee. It seems that would be the case. So, Ms. Taylor, would you be so kind as to relay the oral amendment to us?
Mr. Chair, members, I didn't hear exactly where Representative Dill...
I believe it was on line 1.7, after the word mining, insert the words in Big Stone County. Is that correct, Representative Dill? Thank you. I've incorporated that oral amendment into my amendment. Representative McNamara, did you still have a roll call requested on this? No, I'm incorporating the oral amendment into my original amendment. On the amendment as it stands, did you still have a roll call on it?
We haven't
incorporated it. I'm incorporating the oral amendment into my amendment. I have moved the amendment. I have the ability to incorporate that oral amendment. It's not Representative Dill's oral amendment. It's my incorporation of an oral amendment into my own amendment. So this amendment has that in there.
And you've incorporated
it? I have incorporated it.
And you've incorporated that. Mr. Chair, could Ms. Taylor just read to us the line of where it's been incorporated again?
Okay. Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, members, on line 1.7 after mining, it would say in Big Stone County.
And if I could, Ms. Taylor, I think I was informed that we'd also have to add it at line 1.17 or 1.17 after the word river, also add in Big Stone County. That would satisfy the requirements. Representative McNamara, do you have that?
I do have that, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move an oral amendment to delete beginning on line 1.112. After the period, delete the word until, delete line 1.13, line 1.14, line 1.15, line 1.16, line 1.17 now modified to include in Big Stone County, and I ask for a roll call on my amendment to the amendment.
Representative Kahn.
I would object. I think adding the word of a county to set the location is a minor thing that we ought to allow the author to do, as he seemed to have done without objections. I would think that if we have 24-hour rules for significant amendments, that's a significant amendment. And it clearly could have been offered at any time after the original amendment was there. So
thank you, Representative Kahn. I incorporated that oral amendment out of, I think, trying to address concerns the committee had. If I need to get my iPad out and show a picture of where the headwaters of the Minnesota River originate, I could do that. That one single oral amendment was incorporated because apparently there is some disagreement about where, or potentially disbelief as to where the headwaters of the Minnesota River originate. Sure. If we need to get out a map, we could do that. Representative McNamara, I would appreciate if this could be voted on its merits as it stands. I'm not, you know, asking you to vote one way or the other, but I do think that the amendment deserves to be voted on as it is intended to accomplish the goal. I'm not saying you have to vote for it. I mean, you have your prerogative to vote one way or the other, but I do think that we have the rules in place so everybody understands what's going on. We had ample time. My oral amendment was simply to placate, apparently, the needs of the committee, and I would ask that you not offer your oral amendment. I'm offering an olive branch to Representative McNamara. Are you willing to withdraw it?
No.
Well, as has been kind of the committee's interpretation, and I understand, I mean, I think it is a substantive change and that should have met the 24-hour rule. If this is going to cause complete and total heartburn, I'm willing to vote on it, but I am a little bit, I think that if this was a big issue, you could have offered an amendment to the amendment and got it to the committee. So, roll call having been requested, clerk will take the roll.
What are we voting on, Mr. Chair?
Excuse me. This is Representative McNamara's oral amendment.
Is the vote on if this is in order or not?
No, this would be on the oral amendment.
So you've ruled it is in order?
I'm going to allow it on this.
Okay.
I think it's stretching the boundaries of what we would allow. I'm trying to be amenable to folks. I do think that, you know, there will be a limit to what will be allowed. This is stretching the boundaries, but I want to be respectful of Representative McNamara. And Representative McNamara.
Mr. Chair, I'm really trying hard here. You need to realize, and the audience needs to realize, we have a 24-hour rule. Many of these amendments weren't posted online for 24 hours. You actually...
Representative McNamara, this was posted.
Okay. When was it posted online, Mr. Chair?
They were all emailed to the committee administrator before 6 p.m. on member. They were all emailed to the members before 6 p.m.
When did the public see it online, Mr. Chair?
Excuse me. This one was handed out. I think there was a little technical glitch with this one, but the members did have it emailed to them, as I've been informed by staff.
Mr. Chair, I just want you to know you're answering some of my questions, and I think you should listen to your own answers. You actually added to this amendment. You actually added words to this amendment. I actually just want to delete a sentence, and you said deleting a sentence is out of order, or wondered if it was out of order, and would like me to withdraw.
Representative McNamara, I offered that as clarification because folks here seem to have an issue with whether or not the map and factually the Minnesota River starts in Big Stone County, which it does. And if we want to stop debating that point, I'm happy to take out those words and rule your oral amendment out of order. The thing is, it's not a debatable fact where the start of the Minnesota River originates.
Mr.
Representative Kahn.
Let me just say, first of all, this bill has a lot more steps to go along the way, and we can clearly fix it up. I think that the chair has been very courteous in terms of allowing this amendment, and why don't we just go ahead and vote on the amendment? To clarify exactly the geographic point, which he thinks is correctly stated in the bill, but Representative Dill was happy to have the more specific county reference in that, was not. And clearly, if for some reason that's wrong, we'll fix it at the next stop. But the I don't see what the problem is. He has, through courtesy to you, although he could have ruled this out of order, said that he's not, and I'm certainly not going to object to that, and I assume no other committee member is going to object to it. And so why don't we just go ahead with the set of steps we're going to do?
Representative McNamara.
Well, Mr. Chair, and I am really trying to be patient because I've been interrupted by both you and Representative Kahn while I was talking. You have put words in my mouth that I said I don't know where the headwater of the Minnesota River is. One of the headwaters, this is a plural word, folks. It says headwaters of the Minnesota River. So is every creek flowing into the Minnesota River a headwaters?
No.
No.
Now, I don't know the definition of that. I asked for that. We have not been able to get that. That raises concern to me. If you remember my concern, I asked, does this put a moratorium on all the townships that want to mine gravel? Because the chair mentioned granite. Granite is not just what's in St. Cloud or Big Stone County. It's the rock that we mine in Dakota County that we make into township gravel. I raised concerns about the words hard rock, aggregate, and the fact that it says headwaters of the Minnesota River.
Well,
I know where, excuse me, Representative Kahn, I know where Lake Traverse is. I know where Big Stone Lake is. They meet in Browns Valley, Minnesota, and there's a little bit of dry dirt between the two, and you can argue that the real headwater of the Minnesota River, singular headwater, is Big Stone Lake in Big Stone County. That's not what this amendment says. And when you drag this stuff out at the last minute and then are surprised that we raise questions or are concerned, are you stopping all of the aggregate mining in the entire Minnesota River Valley and then act like you're all excited and I'm the nutty one? Well, I'm sorry. I actually don't want all the townships in southern Minnesota to have to stop mining because we introduced some amendment that the public didn't see because there was a glitch on the internet, but I'm out of order because I want to orally delete one sentence. Representative Kahn, you were my state representative when I was in college. Have you ever had an amendment ruled out of order because they want to delete one sentence in committee? Give me a break, folks.
Let's all take just a moment and cool off.
Mr. Chairman, can I make a grammatical point or historical
Kahn.
Point?
No.
Headwaters is one of those kinds of words which is a singular word in a plural form.
Right.
And it means one thing. When school, if you go look at the reports of Schoolcraft, was that a century ago or so? He was looking for the headwaters of the Mississippi. He was not looking for multiple places. He was looking for one place. And so grammatically, I would just point out that sometimes there can be a division about what the exact headwaters is, but headwaters is one word. It happens to be the grammatical construction, which is called a plural construction of a singular word.
Right.
We have a iPad here that actually illustrates this. Okay. Our staff drafted this. Our staff is very capable. I trust they know what they're doing. I think that this has gotten blown way out of proportion. This deals with a singular point. That's what it's intended to do. That is the legislative intent that I am bringing forward.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to remove my oral amendment and just ask for a roll call on the entire amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative McNamara. Representative, I'm not sure if Representative Torkelson or Fabian was next. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I always appreciate a lively discussion. I do have a question for you, what you're trying to prevent here. I appreciate that. Do you have any examples of where this has happened around the state? Specifically regarding this?
Representative Fabian, I will answer that as quickly as I can. Yes, there are other hard rock mining issues close to here, and there has been potentials with dewatering of local wells. And so this is an issue specific to this one point. The folks there, they want to know if there's an expansion, of who's going to be responsible, if their well goes dry, who's going to be responsible for fixing it. It's specifically to this one point.
Thank you. Follow up, please. My other question then would be, I realize it's 3 hours from the Capitol out to your district. It's a little bit longer for me. Do you have any supporting documents from any county commissioners or township officers with regards to your amendment?
Representative Fabian, I know that the township has worked to try to put in place some zoning and some other requirements to figure this out. I don't have those documents with me. I haven't brought them to the committee, I could ask to have them sent around if I, what I could find. But this is a local issue that was brought to my attention, and it had concerns from citizens, and I think those concerns are legitimate.
And one last point, please. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And what in the permitting process that already exists would not uncover these problems?
Representative Fabian, under the conditional use permits, which can vary between city, county, township, I'm not certain if they have the comfort level that they feel that they need to be able to make sure that their wells are protected. That is the issue that's being brought forward. As you mentioned, or as we saw before, neither the PCA nor the DNR had this before them. This is more of just kind of some questions about local jurisdiction.
Thank you. And then, is this going to affect any permits that are already in progress? They have been started in good faith.
Representative Fabian, there's a potential proposal. I don't know if permits have been applied for, so.
But what I'm asking is, if permits have been applied for that you don't know about, will this put an end to that permitting process that's been started in good faith?
Representative Fabian, I am not certain if that would be the case or not with respect to the local units of government.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks. One more quick question, Mr. Chair. And I guess concern I have, and I know where you're trying to go with this on the granite, but will this affect gravel? Townships, counties want to have gravel pits and such. And your amendment says near the headwaters. How near is near? Are we talking a mile, 5 miles, or are we talking the entire Big Stone County area?
Representative Anderson, it's not intended to be the entire Big Stone area. It's supposed to be the area where the hydrology, which is where I'm trying to explain the topography of where the water has cut away, and there's hard rock deposits near the headwaters of the Minnesota River in Big Stone County. There's certain topography that's very adjacent that folks are concerned about mining basically in its immediate proximity. I don't have from the local folks exactly how many feet or how many yards or whatever it would be. This was brought forward as a concern. I have a hard time specifying exactly what the distance would be. This is what they felt would give them some comfort to go and make sure that they have the ability to at least study the impacts that may affect their groundwater. Representative Anderson.
And just one more comment. I've driven the road from Ortonville up to Browns Valley, some beautiful country, and
it's south of there. This is an area that is south and east. It's in Ortonville Township, so we're not driving up along, I believe it's Highway 7. It would be south and east of the city of Ortonville. Representative Torkelson, you had your...
Are you done, Representative?
Or Representative, I'm sorry, I thought you were finished there.
Okay, so just a clarification, does headwaters mean just where the water comes out of the lake, or are we talking whole lake basin?
No, we're talking where it comes out of the lake, where the start of the river begins, where the lake ends. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Torkelson, I see that Representative Poppy was actually on the list before you. I try to be respectful,
I try to be respectful too, Mr. Chair.
Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of things. One is, did you prepare a bill that is this language? Do we have a bill?
Representative Poppy, this was not brought forward in a bill. This is one of the things that was brought to me. I think it was after the deadline that the folks had said this is one of the directions they want to go. This is a potential avenue, which they thought was appropriate because it's dealing with clean water, and drinking water is one of the issues that we're having a lot of discussion about with respect to this bill. And I do think that, once again, if it were any of us in a situation where an entity comes in, whether or not, we know the strength or how likely that entity is to stick around if there's a problem, and I went to some town hall meetings on this, and I think we had between 75 and 90 people who live in the rural part of that county concerned about their wells being going dry because of mining through the hard rock layers. And I think that with some of the other granite quarries that we have had in Big Stone, or exist in Big Stone County, that this has happened or has had other impacts to drowned water and wells. They are hoping to avoid having to maybe go through some of the problems that have been experienced in the past. And, you know, if somebody else ends up affecting your well and then leaves, and then you're stuck with a $10,000 or $15,000 bill to go and drill a new well, is that fair to the person who really didn't cause the impact? And I think it's would save everybody a lot of heartache and litigation potentially if we just were to do a little bit of study first and figure out whether or not their wells are going to be affected.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have been listening to this discussion for quite a while, like everyone else, and I'm not sure if it's more theater or if it's actual questioning, but I do think that some questions have been raised that are legitimate questions, and one would be whether or not this is something that a local county could do, because I, you know, certainly we've had frac sand mining issues that are in southeastern Minnesota, and some of the counties there have determined that, you know, putting a moratorium out makes some sense. So I'm not sure if it's a level beyond what the level where it should be in the governmental unit. I wonder about the money that's being designated here. I'm not sure if, you know, I'm thinking obviously $25,000 isn't a lot of money in the whole scheme of things, but that's also an amount of money that may or may not be the right amount to be able to do this. I'm not sure if I just think there are a lot of questions about this, and I think it's unfortunate that maybe we don't have more information about it. I appreciate that you are bringing it forward because you're representing the area and you have, you know, you're doing what you need to do as a representative. But I do think that a number of questions have been raised. Some outcomes have been suggested that may be more appropriate, and I'm concerned about this amendment at this time.
Representative Torkelson, you're next on the list.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of questions. Where did the $25,000 figure come from?
Representative Torkelson, that was a number that thought would be appropriate to go and start doing some of the study work.
Mr. Chair, where did the $25,000 figure come from?
That was in consultation with the local folks.
So they have some expertise in this area?
Representative Torkelson, I'm not going to say that the township officers and the residents there have all of the expertise of the scientists and the folks that we have on staff at the DNR. They have a concern. They're doing their best effort to try to address that. I don't think this is an unreasonable request. I do believe we've had similar work done with similar types of resources. This is a very targeted, small area that they're looking at, and to my understanding, the amount is appropriate.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I will accept that. We're having trouble finding these amendments. Were they posted online or were they not?
Okay. I've been informed by staff that they were not. They were emailed out to members. That was, I think, what the committee process has been. They have to be submitted with, there's a 24-hour rule, and then they have been emailed to members, so members have the chance to look at them. I didn't put in place the rules by which the committee operates, and so I'm trying to understand. I mean, I don't think that this procedure is any different than any other procedures we've had throughout the entire legislative session here. I was informed that all members were emailed these amendments, so all of us had the chance to see them in our inboxes.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the amendments was posted online, and I believe early this session when we had a rather large dust-up about rules and how this place operates, we were told that the part of the reason we were doing all this was so the public would have some transparency and see what's going on in our committees and have a chance to react to the work we're doing, so that this work was not being done behind closed doors but being done in an open fashion. And the rules aren't, when these amendments aren't posted, I don't see, and they're only sent to members, how is it possible for the public to have any input into this issue?
Representative Torkelson, I realize that the rules on the floor and the rules committee set can have slight differences. And to my understanding, the same procedure has been followed for all these amendments that has been what we've done throughout this legislative session with respect to this committee. I have not been told that that was not the case.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. So we're going to post some amendments and we're not going to post others. We're just going to use our discretion as to which amendments we want the public to see and which amendments we don't want the public to see. Is that how we're going to proceed with this committee?
Representative Torkelson, I didn't post the amendment. I don't assume that you've posted amendments to the website either. And it was sent out to members, which has been the procedure which we operated under. Let's see. Representative Hansen, he left. Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering, I was going to ask about, I couldn't find it on the amendment, but we're talking about public and what they know. If someone were on this amendment that we're discussing, did not agree or did agree with it, they have no chance to show up and discuss it or give any opportunity, and they can't when we do it on the floor. So,
Representative Keel, this is going to multiple steps before it gets to the floor. This is going to Representative Kahn's committee. There will be, if it is adopted and put into the bill, there will be ample time for folks to take a look at it. I don't believe Representative Kahn's committee would be the last. Would this be the last stop, your committee, or will there be additional stops after that? Yeah. Representative Kahn.
Depending on what things are in my bill, they may go to GovOps, it may go to rules, it may go to...
So it suffices to say that this is not the last stop for this bill.
Right.
Thank you. Representative Keel.
So, Mr. Chair, you're going to make sure that your people know about this bill and this amendment and that they have the awareness to be able to give comment.
Representative Kahn.
Well, what happens now is if we pass the bill with this language, in it. If the language is not in the bill, we haven't voted on this amendment.
We have not voted on it yet.
We're voting on the amendment. It will go into the bill or not go into the bill. If it doesn't go into the bill, then the bill is then proceeding through the process to the floor, to the legacy committee. It's, you know, totally available in all that way. With the amendment in it, which is then able to come, if it doesn't go into the bill, I can't believe that Representative Falk won't want it added in the legacy committee. He'll have to discuss. He's not a member of that committee, so he'll have to ask someone to offer it to him. And legacy committee, for the reasons that you saw the dust up today, legacy committee doesn't have rules, but there would be, you know, I would be very careful to post it early anyway, since it had such a, you know, such a flare. So whatever happens, my guess is, unless Representative Falk decides he doesn't want it done, that this issue will appear before the Legacy Committee with plenty of time to look at it. Let me ask, fortunately, the staff person is the same for both committees, so ask Mr. Malzahn when we deal with this bill in the Legacy Committee. Not formally. When?
I believe it'll be up on Monday and Tuesday.
So, I think we're looking at plenty of time.
Thank you for that, Representative Kahn. Representative Peel, did you have?
You made the comment about the distance, the 3 hours, and it makes it difficult for people to come testify. And I have that issue because I'm 5 hours away.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to make sure that we have ample time to hear from the citizens if they wish to proceed with this or do not wish this.
Right, and Representative Gill, to that point, too, some of the folks I talked to, it was not a possibility to make it down right now. Mm-hmm. And I will explain to them to try to rearrange their schedules and do the best job they can to make it down if they feel that they need to testify at a stop in the process. I will relay that to them. It's one of the things where, you know, we both agree that a lot of our constituents have busy lives, and it's sometimes hard for them to take a day off from work and make the travel down and not fully understanding just when things might come up, and because sometimes we can take longer than we anticipate here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My comment is, though, that we need to make sure we post these things so that they know what's happening, because someone might this might be very important to somebody and they're watching it. And they want to know when we're discussing it. Because let's face it, from 8:15 till now, they certainly could have been here if they were available. Mm-hmm. So, thank you.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. excuse me. I'd like DNR to come down, please.
Mr. Hirsch.
Thank you, Mr. Hirsch. Are you aware of a situation within your agency where you've been requested to do something like this before?
Mr. Hirsch.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Fabian, certainly we've been asked to do studies from time to time, you know, on something specifically like this. And I can't remember anything specifically like this, but we're often asked to do studies and reports.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the $25,000 that's in this amendment, is that an appropriate amount, too much, too little?
And Mr. Chairman, Representative Fabian, I'd really have to check in with staff to see what would be involved with this before I could accurately answer that question. You know, the one thing, as I pointed out earlier, we typically don't have the expertise to evaluate water quality impacts. We would have to get some outside help or something like that. If the issue is well interference and potential depletion of aquifers, that certainly would be within our area of expertise.
And that is exactly what we were trying to address. So that's why I think that the folks felt that DNR was the most appropriate. And that's, I mean, we've had a fairly robust discussion, but it is really about the potential impacts of drinking water. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Hirsch. And then just one last comment, Mr. Chair. With all due respect to staff, you know, we've been talking about the amendment, whether it's posted or not. We were told that they met the 24-hour deadline. Then we were told that there was a glitch, so it didn't get onto the website, and then until 9 o'clock or whatever it was, if I remember correctly. And then through the modern technology we have, we find out that it's not posted at all. I'm just real concerned about the transparency and the stuff that's happening the way it is. Thank you.
Representative Anderson.
Just one more, Mr. Chairman. This amendment, the way it's worded, is a lot of ambiguous terms. We're looking at headwaters. One thing says numerous definitions of the word headwaters. The source of a stream, which is, in this case, Big Stone Lake, could be considered the headwaters of the Minnesota River. This could be interpreted a number of different ways. Then we talk about how near is near, and this is a big deal in terms of, like, you know, Big Stone County. There's two sides to a story, and if they wake up in the morning and say this committee passed a ban on mining in Big Story, and if they wake up in the morning and say this committee passed a ban on mining in Big Stone or near Big Stone County, it just isn't worded very accurately, Mr. Chair.
All right. Well, roll call have been requested. Is the clerk ready to take the vote?
Paul?
Just to make it clear, Representative McNamara withdrew his, and I am, just so everybody's being treated fairly, I'm going to withdraw the oral amendment that was put in because we had determined that this is within Big Stone County at the headwaters. I want to make sure people are being treated fair. So the amendment will be voted on just as it is here. I have withdrawn my oral amendment to it. And I'm assuming staff has got that. Okay. So to the amendment, I vote. Votes aye.
Wagenius?
Aye.
McNamara?
No.
Anderson?
No.
Benson?
Aye.
Bly?
Aye.
Clark?
Yes.
Dill?
No.
Erickson?
Aye.
Fabian?
No.
Freiber?
Yes.
Hackbarth?
No.
Hamilton?
Hanson. Hanson. Kahn.
Aye.
Heel.
Yes.
No.
No.
Poppy.
No.
Yes.
Torkelson.
No.
Ward.
Yes.
Hamilton. Hanson.
There being 8 ayes and 8 nays, the motion. Excuse me. Technology. There being 9 ayes and 8 nays, the motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. And is without the oral amendments. It is exactly as it is had been presented. Okay, we have the A4 amendment. That is also my amendment. I move adoption of the A4 amendment. This is another local issue dealing with Renville County. This is a county that both Representative Torkelson and I represent. There has been some concern about legacy dollars being spent to develop an off-highway vehicle trail or recreation area in the Minnesota River Valley. This would be between some WMAs and other sensitive areas. The local folks are opposed to this. They are worried about other forces coming in and requesting legacy dollars be used for this project. This would say that no legacy monies can be spent to develop this type of off-highway vehicle trailer recreation area within the Minnesota River Valley. It would be, I think, foolish for us to continue to spend millions of dollars trying to restore habitat, improve water quality, while at the same time using legacy dollars to go and have an exact and opposite effect. Discussion to the amendment. Representative Hackbarth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I hope we have some discussion on this from the DNR and some other folks in the audience. But the precedent that this sets is there is work that's being done to build a park out there, an off-highway vehicle park now. And I don't want this to be put in some bill to set some kind of precedent to say that there's been votes opposing that park out there. And that's my concern, that we put this in this bill and it moves forward and then it's going to show up in other bills elsewhere. I don't want this to be a precedent-setting issue. There's been money spent, people working long hours for a long time. This has been a long process for these folks out in this area to get this park up and running. And they have applied, I believe, through grant and aid for money through grant and aid. There's nothing in this bill or any attempt to try to spend any legacy dollars for this type of activity. But there is an application, I believe, that's been presented to the DNR to get some money from grant and aid to help build this park.
Well, Representative Hack, well, continue.
Thank you. My concern is that this sets a precedent, like I said earlier, for other areas. Once we vote this into this bill, that it's going to start showing up in other bills, and there's going to say, well, the legislature doesn't support this. They don't want this to happen in this area. This should not be in this bill. There's no attempt to try to get any money to do this for this. I think it's a very, very bad precedent to set, and it's kind of a backdoor way to try to put a stop to this recreational park being built in that area.
Thank you, Representative Hackbarth. I think part of this is specifically to the legacy dollars, and there had been some concern raised by constituents of mine, potentially some constituents of Representative Torkelson's. These are folks in Renville County, the township where this potential park has been proposed. The township has removed their resolution of support for it. They're bringing that to the county board. But there was concern that there would be groups applying for legacy dollars. I personally do not believe that creating an off-highway vehicle park does anything to protect, enhance, restore the outdoor heritage or the land out there. But there is still some concern that as we've seen with some of these advisory councils and the recommendations they make that sometimes they stray perhaps from what we would consider to be actions that protect, enhance, and restore. That is the reason why this was brought forward.
And Mr. Chairman?
Representative Hackworth.
This park's been around for a long time. This issue just came up out of the blue, too. This issue's been around for a long time. Why no bill introduced for this particular issue? Here we have another amendment that's an attempt to, we don't have any people here to testify on this issue. It's not needed in this bill. There's no attempt to go after these kind of dollars. I don't think there ever is going to be. Or a off-highway vehicle park of any sort. I just don't see the need to put this in this bill. And I don't believe you had any kind of a bill to brought forward that we could have some testimony on before Representative Dill's committee to say that we're not going to do this. I just don't get it.
Representative Hackworth, this has been an issue with local folks. One of the things that they brought forward, they saw this as a place, you know, if your position is correct, whereas no legacy dollars would be spent, I guess perhaps this amendment wouldn't be needed, but then I guess if it is adopted, it wouldn't have an impact either way. And so they would like the comfort. They would appreciate that. We're not talking about other sources of funding that potentially could be applied for, but there is a whole lot of opposition from people who actually live in the area, and I do think that we need to be respectful of their concerns. I know Representative Torkelson has a couple townships in Renville County that this is fairly close to, and I know we've had some meetings. I'm not sure if you've attended them. I know Senator Coonan has had. I see you're shaking your head. No, I know Senator Coonan has met with folks, and I've had a lot of discussions with folks that are concerned about, and this is a park that does not exist, but it is a proposal. I don't know if it's coming from local folks or if it's coming from outside the community folks to try to go and develop this, but the people who actually live there and most affected have some concerns, and I think they are legitimate concerns.
Well, Mr. Chairman and
Representative Hackworth.
Thank you. I think, you know, we could do this on a lot of different issues, not just on ATV parks or all off-highway parks. There's a multitude of things that we could say, well, we're going to put this in this bill because we don't want to spend any money on it. We can do that with a lot of different things. And we can start making some lists of those things and trying to stick it in these bills. This is just wrong. I'd like to hear from the DNR. I think there is a proposal that's been submitted to try to apply for some grant and aid money to get this thing done. And I believe the All-Terrain Vehicle Association of Minnesota is in the audience, too. If we could have them come forward and enlighten us on what's going on with this attempt to build this park out in your district.
Let's see here. Who's coming down for the DNR? Welcome.
My name is Luke Skinner. I'm the Deputy Director for the DNR's Division of Parks and Trails.
Mr. Skinner, if you wanted to accept Representative Hackworth's question, or if you'd like him to repeat it, what would be your preference?
Dr. Hackworth, can you repeat your question?
Representative Hackworth, please repeat your question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you know about this attempt to build this off-highway vehicle recreational area out in the Minnesota River Valley? And is there an organized group out there, or some clubs that are working on putting this together? Has a application been applied for grant and aid money to help build and construct this recreation area? What do we know about this recreation area? And how is it progressing?
Deputy Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, we have been working with Renville County and others on trying to help them with their planning and on the Renville site. I do not know if they've actually put an application in for grant and aid yet at this point, but they've been going through the planning processes and developing and getting their support in the area. This is a county project, and it's something that they could apply for the grant and aid dollars for. But our staff have been working with theirs on providing guidance and stuff on how to develop and if they're going to develop a proposal to do that.
And to be clear, this amendment is drafted to legacy dollars. It's not talking about normal grant and aid for trails, correct? That is what the amendment says. So, I mean, we are talking about legacy appropriations, and so we should keep the discussion to legacy dollars.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Representative Hackhart?
Maybe we could have the All Freight Vehicle Association comment.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, hi, my name is Ray Bowen. And I'm here tonight representing the All Terrain Vehicle Association. I haven't had a chance to talk to you all about all terrain vehicles for quite a while. So here I am back in the saddle. This park is something we've been working on for a couple of years. If you can see the handout, which I just provided you all, there's a description of the actual facility that's proposed. There's a resolution by the county board supporting the establishment of this facility, and also there's a letter from the local ATV club, which obviously is supporting it as well. It's the Minnesota Valley ATV Riders. It's a club of over 100 families. It's a very family-oriented organization. And they anticipate a lot of economic development as a result of this. They've committed, if you review the materials, their own talking points, they indicate here that they are going to adhere to all state rules and regulations, and I presume from an ecological standpoint that applies. And clearly, we spent few years ago, $250,000 on a study and on a booklet on how to do establish sustainable trails, and that's something that we do follow consistently. This is, in my understanding, this facility is in the middle of a gravel pit, for lack of a better term. There's gravel surrounding this entire facility. It's not like it's in a pristine area. It's in a disturbed area, much like the Gilbert facility that we had up north, which has now been in existence 10 years. And by the way, there was a lot of complaints on that one as well. And prior to it being established, once it was established, we have yet to get our first complaint, noise complaint or otherwise. We have found that the Gilbert has worked extremely well. And it's been environmentally sound. I mean, we work very closely with DNR to make sure that happens. And certainly we're working very closely with not only the county board, but the county environmental services area. In fact, I think the Parks and Recreation is under the environmental services area of the county. So this is something I think you're going to find a lot of disappointed people in Renville County if this restriction is put on it. And my guess is many of these, probably majorities, people voted for the legacy bill, assuming that they would be able to get some of this funds for their recreational activity. In fact, I know a lot of ATVers did vote for this, assuming they were going to get some of the money. And if we want to talk about sustainable practices, we can talk about, my favorite example is putting asphalt, six inches of asphalt through our forest. And along riverbanks, that, by the way, when there's a flood, it washes into the river, and those are paid for by legacy funds. And to me, that's much, much more harmful than what we're doing. And we're not putting asphalt. We're not encouraging any asphalt. Obviously, don't want any asphalt. And we would just assume all trails be built with natural services, and we have no asphalt through the state of Minnesota on any trail system. But we obviously, that's not going to happen, and we understand that. But you don't see us advocating that we shouldn't have asphalt in the middle of our pristine forest, and we don't advocate that. And we don't see why we should be precluded from using any legacy funds if it's a legitimate trail sanctioned by not only the department, but in this case, sanctioned by the county government, local government. Now, my assumption is, I haven't been involved in this day-to-day, but you can certainly see what's taking place here, is that the county has been on top of this, and the county board are closer to this than any of us here. And I think that being the case, I think you ought to respect the wishes of the county. And I don't see any reason why you would want to preclude the use of legacy funds for a project like this, when in fact it's probably a lot better in a gravel pit than they are running around the county.
Mr. Bone, just to that point, I don't have the letter with me. I didn't bring it. I probably should have. The township has withdrawn their support for the project, and they're bringing that to the county. And so the county support will likely be wavering. I cannot make that judgment yet because it has not occurred, but I know that the township has taken its action. Because I think that is important, and the township where it's going to be located has withdrawn support and said that they do not want it, and they are adamantly opposed to it, and I don't have that with me at the moment, I'm going to withdraw this because I know I can bring it to Representative Kahn's committee, and I can actually bring those documents with. But even though there is a resolution of support from the county right now, as I've been informed by the township, part of that was contingent upon township support, and the township support no longer exists. So
That would be, I would welcome that, because then we could bring some people, including maybe some county board members and some folks like that as well, and then we could have a good, thorough discussion about this issue here in this committee.
So I am withdrawing the A4 amendment. Representative Dill.
Well, thank you. I know you withdrew the amendment, but since we are having a discussion, or we're having a discussion on the Mississippi River Valley.
Minnesota.
And not the river that begins on the Iron Range.
That's correct.
Okay. That's a lot larger than a township, I think, or even larger than a county. And is it not the Mississippi River Valley?
Representative Dill, that is correct.
And so this says that the off-highway vehicle, trail, or recreation area within Mississippi River, Minnesota, I'm sorry, River Valley. And that's a... This is a 100% policy provision that should absolutely come in. If the legacy bill is amended with this language on it, I'm going to ask it to come to environment policy on the floor. This is a much larger issue than a township, as you reported it to this committee.
Yes, and Representative Dill, this is... I think the language could be tightened up, which is one of the reasons why we can continue to discuss it. But I don't believe that establishing an off-highway vehicle park meets the definition of protect, enhance, restore. Now, we're not saying that they can't use other sources of funding, but there was a concern as to whether or not legacy dollars, specifically when we were spending millions of dollars to clean up the water in the Minnesota River, which is highly impaired, and we're spending money to go and purchase WMAs and other types of wildlife habitat and establish easements directly adjacent to this proposed project. And it's one of the things, too, where especially when we have folks out hunting during the hunting seasons, we may not want, you know, kids riding ATVs and dirt bikes in areas where, you know, people are shooting. And it's just one of these things that there's a lot of local opposition to it. So I withdrew it, and I think we can have a continued discussion and another stop along the process.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just wanted to congratulate you on something, because as I sat here for the last 2 hours listening to the discussion, or certainly an hour and a half, I thought that Representative Rippavina left the legislature, but you are proving that he is still alive.
I will take that as a compliment. Thank you.
I gave it to you as one.
Thank you. Representative Kahn.
I was only going to say, I've never heard such a compliment from Representative Dill before. So...
Okay, Representative Vaginius, I have finished up my amendments.
I think I see an A1 amendment. It is not mine, and I don't know who the author is.
We will go to the A1 amendment. I saw Representative McNamara, Representative Torkelson both acknowledging this one, so who wants it? Representative Torkelson? Representative Torkelson, you move the A1 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do move the A1 amendment.
That motion is before us.
I'm asking for a roll call.
Roll call has been requested.
Representative Torkelson. I would like to just briefly describe the amendment. The amendment is really the governor's recommendations on the Clean Water Fund. And while I do have some issues with some of the items within this amendment, it at least, for the most part, reflects the recommendations of the Clean Water Council, and I feel pretty strongly that the councils that work with us should be part of this process and should not be bypassed. And I just would like to add that this in no way indicates my endorsement of the Ag Water Quality Certification Program.
Although it is in the bill, or the, excuse me, the amendment, that is, this is funding the Ag Water Quality Certification Program. It is in here. Representative Wagenius, do you have comment to the amendment before us?
I do. It does fully fund the Ag Certification Program, so folks who vote for it will be voting to fully fund the Ag Certification Program. So I'm actually pleased about that. However, members, I would ask you to vote no on this amendment. I think it's clear. Well, no, let me just back up and say that I appreciate very much the work of the council, but the governor did not adopt the Clean Water Council provisions in total by any means. This is a continuing process where we take advice from citizens, and that is our role, and that's what we've done all session. And as part of that, we have added some language, and we've been over it before, but we've added some additions for groundwater. And I have this sense that, as we have talked about it, that has become very overblown in this notion that we have now balanced groundwater with lakes, rivers, and streams. That's not the case. The additions for groundwater were less than $10 million in the aggregate, save for one thing that I'll tell you about. But when the irrigators came to us this morning, they said to us, why aren't you spending any of the legacy money on groundwater? And my response to them is there are three places that we are helping with the groundwater issue. One is there's $1 million more in the proposal I have before you for stream gauge monitoring that helps the irrigators. There's $7 million more for water management areas that's good for the irrigators. And there is $1,360,000 extra for geologic atlases, and that is to get us on a 10-year plan since we were on a 20 to 30-year plan. So if we were to do the same kind of spending in this bill, we would be on a 10-year plan. So that is one section that I think through this whole this year, as we have had testimony, I'm not going to go and repeat it, but we have seen groundwater issues in Representative Hamilton's area where Worthington's reservoir essentially went dry, and Worthington is now getting 25% of its water from Iowa. We see groundwater issues in Representative Anderson's area, not in his neighborhood, but in Kandy, Ohio County, which does not have an atlas, which is too bad, and it does not have a groundwater management area, and I think it is a prime area for groundwater management, and this money would help in that area. There are, for those who are particularly interested in agriculture, and I hope we all are on this committee, one of the things that we have learned in this committee, if there are 11 counties that have ag processing in their counties where that's huge business, not big business, but huge business, and some of those counties are having groundwater issues, water issues, and the $7 million for water management areas will help those counties know, and that's what we want to do. We want to make sure that there is water for ag processing because it is a huge water user. We want to keep those industries healthy. So that is one part of what's in the bill before you. This amendment would lose all of that.
One of the other things I have heard, and I just want to make it crystal clear, that while that is different money from as we have gone along, we had some testimony that we are having far less projects on the ground. Actually, one of the things in the numbers in this bill is that there were some shifts in where the projects are managed, but they were not deleted. So all of the money for subsurface wastewater treatment systems has now been moved to the Pollution Control Agency for overall management for tracking, because they have a much better tracking system than Bowser does. So that we haven't changed the numbers. It's just who's going to manage them, but then it looks like that we're doing less. We're not doing less. There is $4 million extra in here for Minnesota Lakes for the Clean Water Partnership Program. It was a wonderful program. It got defunded. Our lakes friends need help to keep their lakes clean. This is a great grant program, and I think for folks who have lakes in their area, this will be very helpful for them. But these are boots on the ground. The other boots on the ground is shoreline restoration, and we have $2.1 million for that. Okay, it's just to give you a perspective of some of the things you will lose if you were to vote for this amendment. But I'm going to mention a couple of others. One is we lose the pollinator language, which I think we all wanted to keep. The second thing we lose is Representative Keel's Riverwatch program, which I think is a good one. And a vote on this amendment is a vote against the Riverwatch program. The final things I want to mention is one of the things I have heard in criticism of this bill, which is not the amendment, but the bill, is there's too much study here. Well, there is study. And one of it is for viruses in groundwater. I think Minnesota citizens want to know, viruses in drinking water, whether that's the case or not. And the big one is for the metropolitan area for what's happening in our groundwater. So with that, members, I would oppose this amendment.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Wagenius, for bringing up the area in which I serve, specifically the city of Worthington. And I'd like to take time to thank the governor for meeting with constituents here just last week that drove up from Worthington to talk about the need for the Lewis and Clark project. And I know the federal government said that they would fund that project, and they funded a project to bring water to the area. And they completed the project all through Iowa and all through South Dakota, but they failed to finish funding that project up in the state of Minnesota. And you brought about brought up the fact that we don't have water down there. You know, Rock County is, I believe, the only county in the state of Minnesota that does not have a single lake, and hence the name Rock County. And we also have Red Rock Ridge, where on one side of the ridge it is all rock, obviously, and on one side of the ridge you have water and the other side you don't. So getting that pipeline finished in our area is very critical, and like I said, the state has fulfilled our obligations, and the local units of government has as well. We're just waiting for the federal government to step up and complete their end. Thank you.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can't remember, is there a roll call on the vote?
Yeah, has been requested.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius, you mentioned that the governor did not fund some of the Clean Water Council recommendations. I can't remember what those are. What did he not fund of the Clean Water Council recommendations?
Representative Wagenius.
Well, I will just bring up one that I was mentioning, and that was the Clean Water Council recommended $1 million for the certification program, and the governor funded it three. That was one of the changes. There were others, and I don't recall what they were.
Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I must have misunderstood Representative Wagenius. I thought you said that the governor didn't follow the Clean Water Council recommendations, that he had made changes to their recommendations. I actually think all he did was, with the new budget, there was approximately $3 million available after the Clean Water Council recommendations were made, and the governor made additional allocations for those $3 million. I actually think he took 100% of the Clean Water Council recommendations and then spent recommendations for the additional money that was now available. He did take them 100% of the council's recommendations, if I remember correctly.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. One of the things that I think we should recognize that the governor, too, has heard the problems with groundwater. The governor responded in his supplemental budget by asking for a fee to pay for water work to be done in DNR. Things have changed dramatically since the Clean Water Council made its recommendations, and things have changed since the governor's bill came into being. So we know that that is a budget process is an extremely long process, and much of what we have learned about groundwater has been since the 1st of January.
Representative McNamara, did that finish? Okay, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and after going back and forth between the two committees, I'm struck by the number of folks who are here in the audience from the agencies and who've worked on these bills, whether they're from the executive branch or whether they're from the interest groups or whether they're on the Clean Water Council or just, you know, interested in this issue. So, and people have been here over the last 3 months as we've gone through a lot of detail. A lot of committee hearings, and we're nearing the end of this process of the committee work, and then we move to the floor. But I do want to just acknowledge and appreciate and thank those folks that are here waiting to testify if needed, if at a moment's notice, and that their expertise and knowledge is appreciated. Thank them for the work they do for the people of Minnesota. When we vote on things, whether we're voting on a council recommendation or an agency recommendation or an idea that a bill that a constituent brings to us, what you're seeing is democracy in action. It's not always pretty. Sometimes kind of messy, but we're trying to do the best we can, and I want to thank you for participating in this process.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. That's a point well made, and we do appreciate the work folks do. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In my work as a farmer and as a county commissioner, and talking with the SWCDs, the one thing that they keep coming back with is their work with Bowser. They work hand in hand doing projects, work on the ground, and what I hear is the grant money is so important. It also leverages federal dollars, and the grants are extremely important to our local SWCDs. And in Representative Torkelson's amendment and the governor's recommendations, it was $36 million over the two-year biennium for Bowser grants, and I believe in the bill before us said that grant program is down to $10 million. And so for that reason, I would encourage support for the amendment that is before us here tonight.
Representative Wagenius.
I renew my motion. I would just recommend that people vote no, and that's what I'd ask you to do.
Roll call having been requested, is the clerk ready to take the roll? Falk votes no.
No.
McNamara?
Aye.
Anderson? Benson?
Oh, did you say Anderson?
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Aye.
Yeah, it's hard to hear.
Benson?
No.
Bly?
No.
Park?
No.
Dill?
No.
Erickson?
No.
Fabian?
Yes.
Freiberg?
No.
Hackworth?
Aye.
Hamilton?
Yes.
Hansen?
No.
Kahn?
No.
Keel?
Yes.
Poppy?
No.
Torkelson?
Yes.
Ward?
No.
There being 7 ayes, 12 nays, the motion does not prevail.
Mr. Chair, just to make sure, did she get Anderson's vote as an aye?
Anderson is recorded as an aye. That is correct.
Thank you.
Okay, we have another amendment. Is anyone offering the A2 amendment?
Mr. Chair, that's my amendment, the A2, and I would request a roll call. It's the
Representative McNamara moves adoption of the A2 amendment and requests a roll call.
And it's the governor's proposal for the Parks and Trails Fund.
Representative Wagenius?
Stand for question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am going to recommend a no vote.
Discussion? Any other discussion? Clerk, ready? Bulk votes, no.
Wagenius?
No.
McNamara?
It's McNamara.
Oh.
It's been that way for 11 years. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Ooh.
Well,
11?
We.
Next person.
Continue through the roll, please.
Anderson?
Aye.
Benson? Bly?
No.
Park?
No.
Dill?
Aye.
Erickson?
No.
Fabian?
Yes.
Freiberg?
No.
Hackbar?
No.
Hamilton?
Yes.
Hansen?
No.
Kahn?
No.
Keel?
Yes.
Poppy?
No.
Torkelson?
Yes.
Ward?
No.
There being 7 ayes and 11 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Representative Wagenius.
Thanks to everybody for working so hard this session. On this amendment or this bill, I appreciate folks' work on the committee and in the audience. And I just want to let you know I feel like I've been to college this year with the amount of information brought to us both by the agencies and by folks just generally in the audience and citizens. And with that, Mr. Chair, I would renew my motion that House File 641 be recommended to pass and sent to the Committee on Legacy.
Mr. Chair, I'd like a roll call.
Representative McNamara requests a roll call. Representative Wagenius renews her motion that House File 641 be recommended to pass and sent to the Legacy Committee as amended. That motion before us.
We have a roll call.
Bulk votes aye.
Wagenius.
Aye.
McNamara.
McNamara votes no.
Anderson?
No.
Benson? Bly?
No. Yes. Yes.
Clark?
Yes.
Still?
Aye.
Erickson?
Yes.
Fabian?
No.
Freiberg?
Yes.
Hackbar?
No.
Hamilton?
No.
Hansen?
Yes.
Kahn?
Yes.
Keel?
No.
Poppy?
Yes.
Torkelson?
No.
Ward?
Yes.
There being 11 ayes, 7 nays, the motion prevails. The bill is passed.
Thank you, members. I appreciate all your work and your help.
Thank you, Representative Wagenius. Do you have any comments as far as roadmap is concerned?
Well, for roadmap, I hope that we have a draft of the omnibus bill for you on Tuesday. And we will be talking to many of you over the weekend. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Wagenius. With that, members, thank you for your time and your patience. This meeting is adjourned.